Hey, Pardon My Take listeners. You can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
For us, golf is simple. It's a chance to get out and have some fun with our friends. But inevitably, little things have a way of ruining it. The group ahead is taking forever, you can't find the fairway with a map, and the bev cart is nowhere to be found. And the best way to make a bad day better is Fireball Whiskey. You get their nips, the little shooters. They are great. Makes bad day way, way, way better. Make sure to grab the new Fireball Birdie Shot Club. It's literally a golf club filled with Fireball nips. Put it in your bag. It'll fit right in that side pocket. Drink Fireball nips and have a great time on the golf course.
On today's Part of My Take, we have a twofer. We have Julian Edelman, Super Bowl champion, AFC championship weekend veteran, talking about Tom Brady, talking about his career. He's not retiring. And then we have,
Why are you going to spoil it like that?
Well, he's not retiring.
Is Julian
Maybe.
Edelman retiring? Tune in later to find out.
Maybe. And then we have, by my estimation, the greatest baseball player of all time. Yeah, I said it. Greg Maddux. Okay. Well,
no,
I guess we talk about that as well when he goes up against Barry Bonds. So awesome interview with Mad Dog. Great two interviews. We also have a preview of Championship Sunday, Firefest, Phil Rivers retires, and Dan Campbell comes on the scene.
Whether you're searching for a home to buy or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can find the home that's just right for you. You can favorite homes, share listings with others, and even schedule tours with a local Redfin agent all in the app. When you're ready to buy, an experienced local Redfin agent can guide you through the whole process. So download the Redfin app today to get started.
Let's go.
Now in the street there is violence, and not a lot of work to be done. No place to hang out or washing. And then I can't blame all on the sun. Oh no, we're gonna rock down to Electric Avenue. And then we'll take it higher. Oh, we're gonna rock down to Electric Avenue.
My Take, presented by Barstool Sports.
Welcome to Part of My Take, presented by the Cash App. Go download it right now. Use code BAR so you get $10 for free, $10 to the ASPCA. Today is Friday.
Thank you.
Friday, January 22nd. And Don Gummit, it just gets the stew out of me. Philip Rivers has retired. It's probably the most depressed I've ever been about a retirement of a player that doesn't play for one of my teams.
It's a bunch of horse mess. I was sick, too, when I saw it. I mean, this is a guy that has given so much joy to us and defensive backs on Sunday afternoons. I'm gonna be missing him next year. I mean, hopefully we can get Jameis or a quarterback that is of his same ilk to provide us with the same type of late Sunday drama. But, yeah, this is one of those where-were-you moments. Like I feel old now. When Philip Rivers, I feel like I'm 29 years old.
It absolutely, you're 29, I'm 35 going on 50. I had a moment where it happened, I processed it, I tweeted some of my favorite clips, and then I said to myself, wait, I'm actually kind of really upset about this. Because yes. Philip Rivers, and I was thinking about it, I was trying to understand my emotions. I was really trying to get in touch. This is great, too, that like the most emotional thing that happens to us is a football player retires.
But I was going to say man card, but I think in this circumstance, you're allowed to cry during the national anthem and when Philip Rivers retires.
So I was trying to do some self-diagnosis, really looking in. It's you know, mental health is in the news every day. We're in tune with our emotions. So I was wondering why I feel this way. Because we also had, you know, Eli Manning retired, Peyton Manning retired, guys who have been part of our NFL Sundays for many, many years. But the difference is, when Eli Manning retired, we knew it was kind of over. When Peyton Manning retired, even though he won a Super Bowl, it was kind of over. Philip Rivers wasn't peak Philip Rivers in the last few years. His arm strength wasn't there. But he still was a joy to watch. And he was still fun, and his teams were still competitive. So it feels like, I'm happy that he's going out on his terms. I'm happy that we won't get some, like, terrible, terrible year of Philip Rivers where we all, it just gets sad. But I still think he could have played another year, so that's why it hurts me. And there are so many Sundays where he was, we made the joke many, many times, but he was the anchor to Sunday at 6:30, 7 o'clock, after watching so much football all weekend long. Phil Rivers was there trying to lead a furious comeback, trying to bring the Chargers or the Colts this last year back and win a game in a hilarious fashion. And we thank him, and I'm sad. PFT, I actually went and looked up a stat. He led, I think it was by over 100, the amount of passes thrown in the fourth quarter when his team is down one score in the last 10 years. And is that not the most perfect Philip Rivers stat you've ever seen? Hold on, I'm pulling it up. Here it is. It is 604. The next closest one is Matt Ryan at 560. So that's Philip Rivers, and I love him forever.
Well, and the only reason Matt Ryan isn't even higher than that is because, like, he doesn't throw that many passes when they're behind. He throws a shitload of passes when they're ahead, and then very few at the end when they give up the lead. So he only gets like two passes in late in the fourth quarter. With Philip Rivers, he is Mr. First, Second, and Third Quarter. And then the fourth quarter, actually, that is where you get the most distilled version of Philip Rivers. And it's hard to put a pin on when Philip Rivers was at his peak. Like, if I were to ask you what year were we at peak Philip Rivers, I don't really know when that was, because I remember the stuff like him lying on his back and jumping up in the air like a bullfrog that's getting fucked more than I do the really, really good Philip Rivers where he got to the AFC Championship game.
So peak Philip Rivers to me started when he was playing that game against the Broncos and Jay Cutler and Philip Rivers were screaming at each other across the sidelines. I think that was his arrival. We're like, oh man, this is going to be fun. I do think that AFC Championship game when he played on a torn ACL, and you know, we'll obviously get to the Hall of Fame debate, but Phil Rivers had some bad luck. It's a team sport. It's actually crazy to look at the numbers and realize how, like, your career and you know, I think he'll eventually get in the Hall of Fame. He's not a first ballot Hall of Famer. I think he will eventually get in. But he obviously will get dinged for the lack of playoff wins and the lack of a signature win and the lack of a Super Bowl. But when you actually look at it with Philip Rivers versus Eli Manning versus Ben Roethlisberger, Eli and Ben both have two Super Bowls. Philip Rivers was the better quarterback in terms of numbers throughout his career.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't know. He was such a, and honestly, if I were in the Hall of Fame committee, if David Baker was our boss, I would be like, okay, all your numbers mean nothing to me. Like, he was so much fun to watch. I don't really care. Like, I can't think of football the last 20 years without Philip Rivers. And yeah, he was never the greatest quarterback in the league because he played with Brady and Peyton and all these guys and Breeze at the height of their abilities. But he was the most fun for a very long time.
So I think that there actually does need to be a Hall of Very Good. People forget that it's the Hall of Fame and not the Hall of Very Good. But we should make the Hall of Very Good and put people like him and like Matt Schaub, fun guys, people that gave us moments in football, that gave us years and memories that we can't just like let be lost to the sands of time, that need to be memorialized in some way, even if they're not good enough to get into the Hall of Fame. And I do think that Philip Rivers should be a Hall of Famer. I agree with you on that. I think,
yeah.
I mean, it's fun to go back and say, like, what if the Chargers had drafted Eli Manning and he didn't hold out and demand a trade to the Giants? I mean, that to me, I think that Philip Rivers would have won more Super Bowls than Eli Manning did.
Yeah, and so here's another stat to back it up. So Robert Mays tweeted this out. Rank and EPA expected, I think, what's EPA? Expected points added is the stat. Since from 2006 to 2020, Philip Rivers was 6 overall, Big Ben was 12, Eli was 35. So, like, yes, Super Bowls matter. I'm not saying they don't. They clearly do. Yep. Like, Ben and Eli have those Super Bowls. Those guys are first ballot Hall of Famers because of their Super Bowls. But my argument would be Philip Rivers still deserves to be in the Hall of Fame eventually because it is a team sport. And he was, you know, he was part of some very good teams, never got all the way, you know, to the top of the mountain. But that also is, that's also kind of perfectly Philip Rivers too. You know what I mean? Like, the whole story is perfect. And his retirement statement to Adam Schefter and to the league was so funny when he said, "I appreciate the opposing defenses making it challenging physically and mentally every week. I also enjoyed the banter. I appreciate the referees for putting up with all my fussing. I think I was right most of the time, dadgummit." And like, so that's Philip Rivers. In his retirement statement, he thanked the defenses and the referees and his 17 children. And that's perfect Philip Rivers.
Philip Rivers, the story of a man who tried and tried as he might, kept climbing that hill, but never reached the climax. I think that's what we always think of when we think of Phil. I think that after he retires, he should definitely, I mean, there's talk about him going into the booth. I think he'd be awesome on television. I think that Philip Rivers would be a great, he's going to go home, try to coach high school football, try to do that, and then he's going to be like, shit, I got all these kids. This is a real pain in the ass having to be a dad all the time, so I better do something that takes me at least out of the house for 3 or 4 days a week.
I think he's going to be a football coach forever, and he's going to win like a million Alabama, you know, class 5 state titles and whatnot. Also, let's just throw this out there because this one needs to be said. 240 consecutive starts. That's fucking insane. Brett Favre obviously has the record, but just think about how physically taxing an NFL season is and how many, like, how hard it must be to play that many games in a row, never missing one, played on an ACL in the AC, you know, a torn ACL in the AFC Championship game. Like, that should be mentioned in the Phil Rivers story. And that game streak, it's almost as impressive as any number streak. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost as impressive as any touchdown streak or pass completion, anything like that. Playing that many games in the NFL consecutively is fucking incredible.
Yeah. How many did Eli have when Ben McAdoo pulled him out for that one game for really no reason?
I don't know. Let me see. Eli, I mean, obviously Eli was up there had too. A lot of games.
But Philip also had some games where he was like, I'm just not going to not be the starter today, like regardless of how I'm feeling. So he was just a guy that's like, you can never lose your job if you never let the next guy in.
Yeah, 210. 210 was Eli, 240 was Philip Rivers. And Eli, I mean, we joked about it, but it did have the last few years where he self-sacked for preservation.
Yeah.
Maybe what about not taking as many hits.
Mr. Stats, Dan Stats, do you have Philip Rivers' career winning percentage?
Ooh, I don't. Do you?
I don't have it in front of me. I just remember that Eli was perfect 500, right?
Yeah, no. Oh, I do have it, actually. I lied. Eli was 117 and 117. Philip Rivers was 134 and 106.
There you have
it. And then Big Ben was obviously on a lot better teams, 156 and 74. I just think, again, I'm not saying that Philip Rivers, you can sit here and be like, he was better than Big Ben or Eli. Statistically, he was. But obviously, Super Bowls matter. They absolutely matter. He just should be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Again, he should be in the Hall of Fame.
He was more fun than Eli Manning.
Yeah. And Eli Manning was fun.
He was very
fun. And Big Ben's a lot of fun.
This is like, not a knock against Eli Manning, but Philip Rivers, you're right. This was like the funnest quarterback class of all time. And Philip Rivers was head and shoulders above the others.
Yeah. So, all right. So we say goodbye to a legend, but good news, you know, as one birth happens or one death happens, a birth happens, we get Dan Campbell, head coach Dan Campbell. Now, he was an interim head coach for a while for the Dolphins there, but holy shit. Was that not the greatest press conference of all time? If you missed it, Dan Campbell was hired as a new Lions head coach. He did a press conference where he accidentally swore, and then he had the quote, "We're going to kick you in the teeth, and when you punch us back, we're going to smile at you, and when you knock us down, we're going to get up, and on the way up, we're going to bite a kneecap off." Does Dan Campbell think he's coaching actual Lions?
He thinks he's coaching war. He's going to war up there. I do take exception when he said another birth happens. Dan Campbell was not, he was not born, he was forged. This is a dude that like came out like in iron and twisted steel. He is my favorite interim coach of all time. I'd even put him above Jim Tomasula in terms of Coach O. Coach O has kind of risen above that. Coach
but he won us so much money when he was interim.
But Dan Campbell, I think, is the ultimate essence of an interim head coach. And this press conference was perfect. His whole mentality basically is, we're going to be more physical than you. Dan Campbell's just always ready to engage another human being physically. He's just like always on the lookout for that. And his mentality is that of like a porcupine. He's like, you're going to kick our ass, but you know what? We're really going to make you hurt when you do it. You're going to hate beating the Lions.
Yes. And he also, you know, people obviously are clowning on it because I think we pointed this out last week that the first thing Matt Patricia did with the Lions was run the Oklahoma drill. The first thing Dan Campbell did with the Dolphins when he was interim head coach was run the Oklahoma drill. But I think the way that Dan Campbell presents it is guys will buy in more than they did with Matt Patricia. because Matt Patricia had a little bit of an arrogance to him, a little bit of, hey, I was with Belichick, I know what I'm saying. Dan Campbell's just a dude. So much so, on his office door, it just said, the dude. It said, Dan Campbell, the dude. He is a guy, and I don't know if it will last forever, and he has to clearly hire some smart people around him, but he's a guy, if you polled the NFL, I guarantee you, there would be a majority of NFL players being like, I'd love to play for a guy like that.
Yeah, I think his players will absolutely like him and enjoy it. The only thing is, if he gets, you know, if it's a 4-12 season, that might be a little bit much at the end of the year to have, like, Dan basically tying you to a chariot and riding you around practice, you know, for the last game of the year. But I think, you know, the Metallica, he needs to bring back the Metallica at practice. What do you call him? You call him Dantallica?
Dantallica.
I like Dantera. Dantera is pretty sweet because he used to be he was a cowboy from hell, and I know that that's like a Texas band, and they're fucking that. If I were listening to Dantera, chances are I'm getting into a fight that day. Like they're going to I think they're going to be like 3-4 all out training camp brawls this summer, and Dantera is going to fucking love it. He's going to eat it up, and
they're going to hug after. Yeah, it's going to be a brawl, and they're all going to be like, dude, that was awesome. We're a fucking team now.
Yeah, whereas if you got into a brawl with Matt Patricia, he would just kind of sit there and smile and smirk at you and be thinking to himself, like, this is good that they're doing that. But then he would punish you, I'm sure, after the fact. Be like, we can't be throwing hands at training camp. Dan Campbell will make the team hug it out, bitch, after every single brawl. So I think they're definitely going to be a physical team. We're really the ones that are lucky here with Dan Campbell because, like, he got a 6-year deal, Big Cat. 6 years. 6 years is so long for a first-time head coach. And you know that
they never fire guys.
They don't
early.
Fire people. Yeah, exactly. So I think Detroit.
Kidding, they do.
Detroit is going to be. They do. Yeah, but 6 years. I don't know. I feel like he's got to stick around for at least three of them, right?
Yeah, three. He gets three. I agree with that. Three feels like he will get at least three. Dan Campbell. And I really was like, I do think the world works this way, where it was sad to lose Phil Rivers, and you need a character to take his place. And there it is. It's Dantera. It's Dantallica. And we have Urban now. By the way, did you see, on a side note, did you see who Urban got as his GM?
No.
Balky. The guy Jim Harbaugh and he had the biggest feuds ever on their way out in San Francisco. That is such... I love that Urban Meyer is bringing Ohio State-Michigan feuds to the NFL with that. It was a this league hire if this were the NBA.
Yeah, it was a passive-aggressive move. It was a direct shot at Harbaugh for really no reason whatsoever.
None.
Fuck, that's
awesome.
I mean,
he's a good GM.
Like
he built a good team.
And Nick Saban got our guy. He got one of the Dougs. He got Doug Marrone as his, what, offensive line coach?
Yeah, offensive line coach, which...
That's going to be great seeing Doug on the sideline.
I was thinking about that, too, because I think the Bears are losing their offensive line coach. It's like, man, I wish we had gotten Doug Marrone. But then I realized, like... It really is a genius thing to do for a coach that just got fired, because you're going to Alabama and you know you're going to win. You're going to almost like it's almost a cleanse of your body, because if you're a coach that got fired, you probably lost a lot. Now you get to go get a cleanse, like a nice spa year where you win and dominate the fuck out of everyone else. And it's not like there's going to be any firings at Alabama. The only thing that happens at Alabama is guys get hired to new jobs. So it's the greatest rehabilitation program of all time. Nick Saban needs more credit for rehabilitating football guys and setting them back out in the wild.
How quickly do you think it takes to get rehabilitated by Saban? Like, if you coach Alabama for 2 months, do you think you'll get another job right after that?
Yeah, I think so. I think if they win a national title. By the way, so I'm in Detroit right now.
Yeah,
Everyone's joining me for the weekend, but I'm hearing the pipes right now, and it is so loud.
It's ridiculous
so loud
that
not
we have
being
to
in
live
the room.
This. Hey, is Pete in the room with you right now?
Well, they're voice activated. That's the problem.
He's a fucking loser. He's a loser.
If Pete comes back in the room, bring him over onto the mic, because I feel like he should have to address our listeners. He should have
Pete,
to explain himself.
Come address the listeners. What?
It's so loud in here, Pete.
He just groaned. I think he was jerking off.
Yeah,
which is weird, because he actually can't produce cum after his vasectomy.
No longer nuts.
Do you want to address them?
No, I've worked on the pipes.
He's worked on the pipes.
You worked on the pipes?
I
heard you were working on the pipes.
Fuck you, Pete.
He drained the pipes. Pete drained the pipes. That's what he said.
I actually do think that Dan Campbell would implement the ideas that we gave Matt Patricia when we were up there talking to him, doing the interview with him. That Matt Patricia just kind of like looked at us, smirked. He was a prick in like a lovely way, but if we gave those same ideas to Dan Campbell, he'd be like, I'm going to write all these down because I'll use at least one of them. Like the idea of having the factory clock, the punch clock, right at the door every day. The lion or the sheep that you ignore because lions don't care about the opinions of them. I think that he could – we and Dan Campbell would get along very, very well, swimmingly.
Yes, yes. And Matt Patricia was one of the weirdest interviews because we had fun with it. We thought it was funny, and then it just didn't translate to the podcast where people were like, man, he was a dick. Like, no, actually, he was nice in person. Like, he wasn't – it was kind of a jokey way, but that's, you know, Dan Campbell. We will try to interview Dan Campbell. We have a request out there. Dan Campbell, you probably listen to this show because you're a football guy. What up? First of all, congrats on the hire. That's awesome. 6 years. You'll probably be there all six, but also let us come interview you while we're in Detroit.
Yeah, please do. Here's a free recommendation. This is just a taste of some of the stuff that we'll throw at you in person. Just get heavier weights. I don't know why more coaches don't do that. Just like get heavier weights than you currently have in the weight room.
Got the silver medal ones.
Yeah, just heavier. Yeah. Just as long as you can be like, we lift heavier weights than any team in the NFL. That's the Dan Tara way.
Yeah, maybe get the guys doing the Scottish big log toss that they do.
Hell yeah.
I feel like, remember when Sean Payton took his sabbatical and came back and tried to get everyone to do CrossFit on the Saints and they all got injured? I think Dan Campbell definitely has some like, hey, we're all going to do Navy SEAL training and everyone's getting injured. Yeah. That feels like a Dan Campbell move waiting to happen.
Look around. Look at the guy next to you and the guy next to you. Two of you are going to die.
Two of you are going to throw out your back before training camp even begins.
The only problem might be that he's too alpha. Imagine like being an alpha dog, because you need a couple alpha dogs on your defense and on your offensive line and leadership. Imagine like having a coach that you knew was always going to be alpha over top of you. That might be an issue right there.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, that's a good point. Like, you could – if he might have to put on some pads. He might have to play. He might have to get out there and play and show him how it's done.
I wouldn't hate that either.
All right, let's get to conference championship preview. Then we got two great interviews, Julian Edelman and Greg Maddux, coming up. Before we do that, Pepsi. Pepsi is bringing you a halftime experience like never before. Grab and scan your Pepsi to get closer to the action. Tune in on February 7th for the Pepsi Super Bowl halftime show. Award-winning artist The Weeknd will be performing live on the world's biggest stage. And go to PepsiHalftime.com to check out exclusive behind-the-scenes content, AR filters, and more for the halftime show. I love the Super Bowl halftime show. It's always great. It does feel like it's an event. It feels like an event. I know they announce it like 2 months beforehand. It feels like an event. They have Blinding Lights playing on every commercial, which is a banger, so I'm not even mad about that. But Pepsi has the best halftime show out there. February 7th, the big game for the Pepsi Super Bowl halftime show. The Weeknd will be performing, and you can go right now to PepsiHalftime.com to check out exclusive behind-the-scenes content, AR filters, and more for the halftime show. Thank you to Pepsi. I actually, once I checked into my hotel room, I had a refrigerator full of Pepsi, so I am good to go for the weekend. Go again, PepsiHalftime.com. Thank you to Pepsi, our wonderful sponsor. All right, conference championship. Let's do it. Let's start with the Battle of the Bays, or as Chris Berman used to call it, the Bay of Pigs. Tom Brady going up to Lambeau. I have talked myself into the Bucs being able to beat the Packers. No surprise, but I have. I have fully talked myself into it. I don't know. I just have talked myself into it.
I don't think so. I think Green Bay is going to be able to handle it pretty easily. The weather right now, it's scheduled to be 29 degrees and snowy in Lambeau Field. Like, that to me, just that's a Packers win. God is on their side this week.
I have a
Big Cat. Let me try to phrase it to you in a way that you can accept the fact that the Packers are going to win. Just say, like, this feels like an Aaron Jones game to me.
But they can't. The Bucs defense run defense is the strength of their defense. And Vita Vea, I don't know if he's going to play. It'd be crazy if he did. But if he plays even half the snaps, that's a nice addition for them. I look back at the Packers season. They're not frauds. They're clearly not frauds. Aaron Rodgers has been playing. He's the MVP. He's been playing at an incredible level. I just think it's going to be a coin flip. I think both of these games are going to be coin flip games that whoever makes a play like late in the fourth quarter, I know this sounds cliche, but it's clearly like this is actually saying something with how good these teams are. You're not going to have Tom Brady panic. you're not going to have Tom Brady, like, go behind. You know what I mean? Like, the Packers' game script pretty much every game is they come out hot. They're really good in the first and second quarter. And then they'll sit on the ball a little bit. Tom Brady is not going to be afraid if they're down 14-0 right out of the gate. They were down 10-0, and then they won 38-10 earlier this year. Mm-hmm. I have a crazy stat for you that Hank, you're going to love this. I saw this tweeted out this weekend. And we talked about Phil Rivers. It's a team sport. So this is a team sport. Tom Brady obviously has been on some really good teams. But if you took Tom Brady after turning 37 years old, he has 14 playoff wins. Peyton Manning has 14. Peyton Manning's career, Drew Brees' career, Aaron Rodgers and Ben Roethlisberger, their entire career versus Tom Brady after he turned 37. Tom Brady has more playoff wins than Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, Ben Roethlisberger, the same amount as Peyton Manning. And like all these stats, it's crazy. He basically has a full career after the age of 37 that all these other guys have. And we talked about it on Monday, but when is he going to stop getting big wins that we don't expect, right?
Yeah. I'm very much looking forward to this game. I mean, Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers in the playoffs against each other. It literally does not get better than that in football. It doesn't get better than that. Period.
I have talked myself into the Bucs beating the Packers because I know that I need, like, I think if the Packers get to the Super Bowl, then they're just going to win it. I just can't handle that. I can't handle that.
Okay. I understand that, but I still think the Packers are going to win this weekend. And we joked about Brady not being a cold weather quarterback, being a Florida kid from California. I do think that Bruce Arians is not a cold weather coach. I think he's a warm weather coach.
Yeah, but Brady's coaching now, didn't you hear?
Brady's doing full-time play calling? What about Byron
Leftwich? Yeah, that's right. Bruce Arians
has just set himself up for like the perfect, like he's just middled himself perfectly where he was like criticizing Brady. And then once they got good, he's like, well, Brady's doing a lot of the coaching now. They didn't do that in New England. So that's why we're winning.
Yeah.
But then when they lose, you'll be like, well, Brady was coaching. So
I agree with you, PFT, in that we will get Bruce Arians' face looked like he had no oxygen in his skull when he was in a dome in New Orleans last weekend. Dude,
it was
now
so red.
Put him
it was
in Lambeau. Yeah, in Lambeau, like, we're going to get Tom Coughlin face to the max. I think you actually need to probably cover him in Vaseline before he even goes outside this weekend, just in case. Because Bruce Arians, it is a life alert. He should have a life alert instead of the red flag, in case something goes wrong.
I'm going to need a Pantone check on Bruce Arians' face this weekend. Because last weekend, it was like a purple. It was like darker red than the team colors were. So, yeah, going to need a definite Pantone check on that. He's probably going to just have a flask on the sideline to keep warm. If I know Bruce Arians, he's got like a couple nips of Crown stashed away.
Oh, man, I'm so nervous about this game. I really need the Packers to lose.
Can I just call something real quick? I'm just going to a future call here. Aaron Rodgers, he announced that he was going to be doing Jeopardy or Sports Jeopardy. He was going to be hosting it. I actually think that Aaron Rodgers is going to eventually be the full-time host of Jeopardy. I think he's going to be, after he retires, I think he will.
I thought it was Kenny the Kid.
I think Aaron Rodgers is going to like doing it too much, and it combines like all his favorite things, mustaches, being smarter than everybody, and letting everybody know that you're smarter than them. So like I think that he's going to really enjoy hosting Jeopardy and just stick around.
So you're saying pretty much my only shot now at this point to get rid of Aaron Rodgers is I need like Pat McAfee to have a kid and then keep that kid from eating beans and then have him tweet it and then get canceled and then cancel Aaron Rodgers by association.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, I will work on that happening.
You can make that happen.
Yeah.
It's
not that crazy.
I will try to get Pat McAfee's unborn child to get addicted to beans and never be able to learn how to use a can opener. Fuck.
He's going
to
be around forever. He just
Chris Godwin. By the way, here, I'm going to prop. I don't even know if the props are up yet, and I'm going to get to my can't lose parlay. I think Chris Godwin's going to have a big game. There it is. Okay. Jair Alexander's one of the best corners in the league, so it's going to be interesting. Like, I think it's going to be up to Antonio Brown, if his knee's okay, Gronk, Scotty Miller, Chris Godwin to do a lot of the heavy lifting here.
Playoff Lenny.
Buy the shirt now. We actually we are collaborating with Playoff Lenny on this shirt.
That makes sense because I was confused why he was like promoting the shirt.
Yeah.
He hit me up.
This is called Playoff Lenny, and he's embracing the nickname.
Yeah,
smart.
It's great. We Chris better Godwin. Get a playoff Lenny from Joe Buck this weekend. All right, other
over under
the AFC,
is yeah? 63.5 yards for
who?
Chris Godwin.
I like that. All right, I'm gonna take the over and his catches. All right, so AFC Championship game. Now, I said it on Monday, and I'm sticking with it. I think the Bills are going to win, and I wouldn't be surprised if they win convincingly.
I agree. And it's not just because, I bet on the Bills early in the week when I thought that Patrick Mahomes is going to be out with a concussion, which is not going to happen. He's just practicing. He's just taking all the snaps and practicing.
Dude,
and they're saying they had to delete a tweet earlier this week because it was Patrick Mahomes very clearly as the number one quarterback. And they're like, QB1. And meanwhile, after practice, Andy Reid's like, yeah, he's in the concussion protocol. And they had to delete the tweet because it's like, yeah, obviously he's going to be starting. His foot is an issue. The toe is an issue.
I'm kind of mad at you, by the way, because you let your human side, you became too much of a human being like Patrick Mahomes might not play.
Yeah,
and you forgot that this is football and they're going to make him play no matter what.
I forgot that Roger Goodell was in charge of the NFL for a second.
Yeah, you thought for a second that we actually cared about player safety.
Yeah, Roger Goodell probably would delay the game by a week. No offense to Colin Cowherd. He probably would just to make Patrick Mahomes play. He would probably personally go to – he would infect himself with COVID and go into the Chiefs locker room and just piss all over the place, ensuring that they had enough tests to get the game postponed.
Yeah, and by the way, we care about player safety. The NFL does not care about player safety. We want that on the record. We do, but we just know better that the NFL does not, and their star player is going to play, and they'll find any way to spin it that it wasn't a concussion, and it was a choked nerve, and whatever it may be. I think we're going to get the best Bills performance, and I do – there has to be a point the Chiefs have not covered in 9 weeks now. So I guess really if you're betting on the Chiefs this week, you're saying they're just going to flip that switch we're talking about and they will be those Chiefs. And maybe that's true because Patrick Mahomes still is the best quarterback in the NFL.
Yep.
And those
Chiefs, to be clear, if those Chiefs show up, I think those Chiefs beat those Bills. But I think those Bills beat these Chiefs.
Well, let me throw this out there, too, because remember, those Chiefs still, last year, were down, 24 to the Texans, 10 or 14 to the Titans. These Bills are better than those two teams. Like, they just are.
Right.
So if they go down by if they spot the Bills 17 points, that's going to be very, very difficult. It's not the same as playing against a Texans defense that can't stop anything or a Titans defense that was slightly fraudulent. Like, that...
Right.
It's just not the same.
But those Texans are very bad, don't get me wrong, on defense. But those Chiefs were just like, when they flipped that switch for the last three quarters of those games, they were unstoppable. The Bills can't stop that. And they won so convincingly that if that switch does get flipped, I don't think that the Bills can stop that either. But I haven't seen those Chiefs, with the exception of maybe like a couple halves this year. Like,
yeah,
when was the last time you saw them?
First half
be
against
that
the Bucks.
Yeah,
first half against the Bucks when they just torched the Bucks. That was the last time it really felt like those Chiefs showed up. At what point though would they have to flip the switch? What I'm trying to say is the Bills are good enough that if you don't flip the switch in time, it will be too late. Like it would be too late for if the Chiefs are down and they're like, hey, we're just going to flip this switch in the fourth quarter. I don't think that's possible against these Bills.
I think 17 points at halftime, that's the cutoff line. If it's 14, then the Chiefs are still in switch territory. If it's above that, then I think the Bills have it. But yeah, I agree. I think that the Bills are going to win. And I might even double down on my bet because I feel – here's why. Because I feel so shitty about the bet. I feel like I was an idiot for thinking that Roger Goodell was going to take player safety seriously and that Patrick Mahomes probably wasn't going to play a week after a concussion. And at the time, hand up, I didn't know that he just had a nerve stroke or whatever it was. I thought he actually had a concussion because that's what was reported. That's what he probably had. But I feel so bad about the bet and so uncomfortable with where I am, I might double down on it because those are the types of bets that I usually win. I always lose the ones that I love, the ones that I'm super confident about. Always,
yeah.
100% of the time, lose those. So I feel a little dicey about it, but I think I'm going to double down, and I think it's going to be Bills. I'm going to say Bills by 6.
This is now making me very nervous because we're both way too confident in the Bills, and it feels like a Monday show where we're like, oh, yeah, Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback on planet Earth. Whoops.
Yep. Yeah, what about Bucker, though? What about Bucker? Bucker's had issues.
What about Bucker?
He's got issues. He is the opposite of me. He can't hit a short field goal or an extra point.
And I think we're going to get two wow Josh Allen plays. I think we're going to get two plays where he's like, holy shit, arrival. This could be the coronation of Josh Allen. Because if, you know.
You think that goes both ways, though?
Well, we know that Patrick Mahomes, yeah.
Of course.
No, I'm saying, I'm saying wow Josh Allen, like, what the fuck?
Oh, hating our friends.
You guys talk about how he does crazy shit. He just does like
he mashes all the buttons.
Yes, at the end of the play, he panics and just
You're right.
He does do that. You're talking about a difference between like a wow play and a whoa play.
Yeah,
you're talking about Josh Allen has whoa like plays where it's like holy shit, that was incredible, and then he also has no, yes plays.
Yeah.
Where it's like, what are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? Oh, my God, it worked.
And then he's got yes, no plays.
Yeah.
Those are the ones where he mashes the buttons. And then he's got whoa plays, like it's like he's a horse that needs to be restrained. But either way.
All of Josh Allen's plays.
Either way, it's going to be fucking awesome. These are the two quarterbacks with the strongest arms in the league. And it's going to be nuts. They're just going to be throwing the ball over the place. So
we're going to be wrong about one of these games or both of these games, but I don't give a fuck because it is one of the most exciting championship, you know, Sundays we've had in a long time. It's the top four quarterbacks in the league, would you not say?
Agreed.
It is the top four quarterbacks in the league this year.
Yeah.
When does that happen? Where we get all the top four quarterbacks in the NFL this season are playing on Championship Sunday. You can't ask for more than that.
And no matter what, we're going to get a great Super Bowl matchup. We've got – it could be Mahomes-Rodgers. It could be Mahomes-Brady. It could be the first home Super Bowl for Tom Brady. That's going to be a great storyline. Allen versus Rodgers. Yeah.
Jordan Love versus Chad Henne.
That's true.
Matt Barkley could start in a Super Bowl. There's all kinds of combinations. Whoever the backup in Tampa is, probably Byron Leftwich.
Ryan Griffin.
Ryan Griffin is what I was going to say. Week.
Yeah. Tom versus time.
Tom versus time. Yeah, all of these things.
Dude, Tom's been kicking time's ass.
Yeah.
Like, it really hasn't been a competition.
Yeah. No one beats time, but, like, Tom Brady kind of has.
Yeah.
All right, you want to hear the Can't Lose Parlay? Let's see what's – you guys tell me which part of this loses.
Before you do, I got a question.
Yeah.
The Can't Lose Parlay has lost a bunch of money this year, right?
Wrong. Thank you for asking, PFT. So we went back. We were getting accused of being a losing bet every single week. Yes, it has lost more than it's won, but guess what? It's always a big plus money bet. So if you had bet the Can't Lose Parlay every single week this year, you'd be up 0.75 units.
There you go.
So if you bet 100, no, I'm not going to say that. Gamble responsibly, 1-800-GAMBLER. All right. Michigan is going to be live. Noon today, Michigan's going to be live. So the Can't Lose Parlay will be there. You download the Barstool Sportsbook app. You put in money. If you play with the money you put in, Penn is matching it for small businesses in Michigan. So it's going to the Barstool Fund. So you'll see all types of promos. Ask yourself this. Do you want a promo that helps small businesses, that helps your community, that helps the people around you? Well, that's Penn. That is Barstool Sportsbook app. So go download it. Put in money. It's super easy process. You can bet legally as of noon on today, and the Can't Lose Parlay will be in there. Also, it hasn't been fully set up yet, but I think I'm going to be introducing a new bet on Sunday where you get the combined points. You can either bet the underdog or the favorite. So what is it right now? It's like 3 and 3.5.
Yeah,
the game. So it's six. You get 6.5. So if like the Bucks win outright, you now have. Say the Bucks win by 3, you now have the Bills plus 9.5.
Carries over to the other game.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Or if the favorite blows them out, so you can bet favorite or underdog, and it's a combined bet. Kind of a fun deal, right?
I like it. I like that a lot.
Yeah. All right, so here it is. Bucks plus 8.5, Bills plus 8.5, both the games over 45. That's a Can't Lose Parlay. It's going to probably be like plus 400. Thoughts?
I love it. I'm scared how much I love it.
I love it, too.
Wait, both games over 45.5?
45.
Over 45, and then it's 8.5?
8.5 for both the teams.
It's going to be cold and snowy, though, Big Cat.
Snow doesn't matter.
Snow doesn't matter, Hank.
We're going to get to that with Jules in a second. Yeah, you weren't paying attention to the interview, Hank.
I'm just saying. I'm just trying to, you know, played.
Now it can lose. Just so everyone knows, it can technically lose, but it can't lose. But also gamble responsibly.
If Patrick Mahomes' toe acts up, and by the way, the whole turf toe thing, turf toe is a very serious injury. That's why I keep saying it's more serious than a concussion, even though it's not. Turf toe is just a completely mislabeled injury. If it had a cooler name and a more dangerous sounding name to it, I think people would respect it a lot more. But turf toe just sounds like a stub toe. They should call it, I don't know, fire foot or trench foot.
Paralyzed foot.
The devil's ankle. Yeah.
Yeah. Can't walk injury.
Yeah. Amputation. Diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
Pre-diabetes. Yeah.
Yes. Pre-death. Everything's pre-death, right?
Yeah. It's every serious, though. So just keep your eye on Patrick Mahomes' right toe. That's all I'm saying.
All right. Let's get to our interviews. And we have Julian Edelman and Greg Maddux. Great two interviews. Then we'll finish with Firefest the week. PFT, you had something you want to tell people about?
Yeah.
With golf season in full swing, Chevy wants to help you make the most of every drive, and the all-electric Blazer EV's bold design and dynamic performance make it the perfect electric vehicle to get you to the course in style and comfort. Chevrolet, together let's drive.
And now, here's Julian Edelman.
Okay, we now welcome on our very good friend, three-time Super Bowl champion, Julian Edelman.
Future Hall of Famer.
Future Hall of Famer, Julian Edelman, on the show. Been too long. Let's start here, Jules. Can we get you to reconsider your retirement from football?
You guys are nuts. What are you talking about?
We don't want you to retire. We don't want you to retire.
What are you talking about?
You're not retiring, correct?
Right now, we're being a dad right now, and we're sitting back, and we're training, getting our body ready for the next year, and you know, it's the time to get away from football right now.
Okay.
All right.
Long, crazy year.
Yep. All right, so breaking news, Julian Edelman is not retiring from football. Thankfully, we could dispel that because we saw Philip Rivers retire, and we're like, uh-oh, Jules probably next.
He had a great career. He had an unbelievable career. But I don't know. We're not there yet. Right now, it's the time, like I said, it's going to be – this whole year was so jacked up, man. Like, it was so long. I just need to decompress for a little bit. And I'm out in L.A. right now and, you know, taking my kid to school and picking her up and doing those kind of things that you don't get to do during the season. And I'm enjoying that right now. So don't necessarily know what you guys are talking about.
Yeah, I was joking. It's more along the lines of we've had so many of our stars retire recently that we're just leading every conversation off with, you're not retiring, are you? Because like we're worried that everybody that we talk to is on the way out. But you're not. You're not. You had a knee thing this year that you're recovering from. I wanted to clear this up right off the bat because I've been following Adam Schefter's Twitter account pretty carefully over the last 6 months, and he always uses this exact phrase about your knee. Maybe you can explain to me what it means. Julian Edelman underwent a precautionary standard knee procedure this morning. What's a precautionary standard knee procedure?
That one baffled me too. I don't know. I don't know who's leaking all these things, but Chef Scheffner. He has got me on this.
Was it preemptive knee surgery? Because that's what it sounds like he said there.
Yeah, I don't know what he was trying to sound. I had to go in and get some stuff taken out. I don't think anytime you go into your knee, it's a good thing. Scheffner, he's got his ways of putting everything.
Are you feeling okay?
He's always
though?
Right.
Like, are you? Does it feel good? Are you healthy?
I'm getting there, man. I'm getting there. It was a it was a rough year when it came to just my physicality and how I felt. It's tough, boys. It's tough, but this is the time where you sit and you self-reflect and you self-evaluate and you self-scout yourself throughout all of last year. And you really go in and try to develop a formula and try to develop a game plan for how you're going to attack the off season. That's the process I'm in right now.
All right.
Self scout.
So I was obviously joking. You're not retiring, but do you, you say it's a tough year and it's been a tough year for a lot of people. How weird is it to not be in playoff football right now? Because that feels like for you, at least it was so routine that every year come January, you were ready to go. You had your beard very long. I bet you that probably is nice not to have that long,
gross beard because you're a good looking dude. No offense. Is it weird though to sit here in January and be like, I should be playing in playoff football right now?
It is. You know, since I got to New England in 2009, this is the first year we didn't win the division, let alone go to the playoffs. So it's definitely, it's super weird sitting and watching teams play in the division round when, you know, usually this is your first week, you know, you're going in and you're going to get some reps and put towards the game plan off the bye week. There's always like a pep in your step, you know, the years of grind, the, you know, the first 8 weeks you're cool because you're coming off the off season. Then like week 11 through 13, you're like miserable because things are nagging, things are adding up. And then usually you get a bye week going in. I've been fortunate enough to be part of teams that have had a lot of bye weeks going into the playoffs. And that's when you get your like second, third win and things start realigning. And then that's when you start learning your team. So it's been definitely different. You know, but as a football fan, I mean, I've been sitting and watching games and, you know, it's been fun to watch the games and see some of your former teammates play on multiple teams.
Yes.
So it's been cool.
So you brought it up, watching the Tampa Bay Buccaneers play, or is it like the SpongeBob meme where you're up in the window and you're looking down and you're like, there's Gronk and Tom having a great – oh, and then they have Scotty Miller down there. That doesn't make me feel bad at all.
Hey, he's a stud. He's got some speed. No, it's – you know, it's – it's kind of like a relationship where you guys kind of – or a marriage where you grew apart, but you still love each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you still love each other. You still may have a couple kids. We have three kids. So there's like – you know, there's still communication of what you guys are going through and how you're doing. But you both got your own lives that you have to keep on, you know, going towards. And that's kind of how it's like. You know, I want to see those guys do well. It's awesome seeing Gronk and Tommy doing well and playing and making big plays. And, you know, right now it's obviously definitely weird, but yeah. It is what it is.
When is Tom Brady going to retire? Are you you've been around him more than anyone else, you know, in terms of career-wise. We're sitting here being like he's 43. And, yeah, he's not peak Tom Brady, but he's still making throws down the field. It's not like some of the other older quarterbacks you've seen, Peyton or Drew Brees, on their way out. Like, has this shocked you at all? Is there a moment where you're like, hey, he's got to eventually, like, it eventually has to end, right? But maybe not.
My respect level for Tom goes up each year, 'cause the older I get. You know, I'm 34 turning 35, and you know, it gets more and more difficult when you compound years in this league. And to see him, you know, going out at 43, playing, you know, really good football, it's inspiring. That's what it is. I don't know what his plan is, but knowing him, I mean, it's all when that little fire turns off in his little chest. And I don't think that thing's going to be turned off here soon, because he that's the one thing that you can pull away from Tom when I've played with a lot of guys is his competitive stamina is second to zero, to no one, absolutely no one. I mean, he comes in every day, you know, with a purpose, with, you know, trying to improve something. He eats, breathes, and sleeps this stuff. And, you know, I've never doubted him, and I don't think anyone should. So I think he'll go when he wants to go.
It does sound routine to just say that, because it's cliche and everyone's like, oh yeah, this guy's competitive stamina or his competitive drive. But I think about like my own personal life. Like I take at least a half day off every day. You know what I mean? Like there's a couple hours every day where I'm like, yeah, mm-hmm. I'm going to sit back and just do nothing, or, you know, scroll the internet or watch some basketball.
Well, scrolling the internet is also your job.
Kind of.
So, like,
you're
like, I'm going to look at the different websites for a couple hours.
But I have a competitive drive that's, like, medium, I would say.
I mean, you guys are doing pretty well. I mean, you're competing at a high level in this world that you're in. So I would say your com- competitive stamina is higher than what you think.
Well, that's also a little trick to catch us there.
Thank
like
you. Appreciate that.
Telling everybody he doesn't work hard. Yeah. So then nobody else tries to work as hard as he does. And then people like you are like, no, Big Cat, you do work really
hard. But there are days, like Tom Brady, would he come in on a, well, I guess during the week, let's say off season, would he come in like on a Friday in the off season and be like, hey, we're going to take it a little easy today? Or it's like, no, I want to get this done.
No. I mean, anytime we go out and we would work, there would be no taking it easy, unless it's, you know, like a down day and he has a certain amount of throws that he wants to do, or I have a certain amount of routes that I would want to do. I mean, you would go into that, but it would be formulated,
right?
You know, like today is going to be kind of like a chill day, but he's going in with that glare in his eye, that stare that he has, and he's going to attack it. That's just the guy he is. Now, I'm sure, you know, he takes days off, and, you know, him and Alex have a routine and a formula that they do where they probably, you know, look into all those things, how many throws he needs, how many of this, how many of that. You know, they've got it down to a science. I mean, the guy's been doing it this is his 21st year. I mean, if you do anything for 21 years, I mean, you're going to find ways to just refine and evolve and get better at.
Yeah.
I'm sure if you guys listen to your interviews from what, like 5 years ago, you're like, damn, I wish, like, what was that? I sounded like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, the one with Lawrence Pirelli was pretty good.
But it is, wouldn't you say there are definitely like Fridays or, you know, a Monday where you're like, hey, I'm going to come in and I'm just going to kind of hang out a little
bit. I'm going to fuck around. Yeah, this feels like a fuck around.
There's no purpose to my day today.
Yeah.
There's definitely those days.
Yeah. I mean, we all have those days, but sometimes you have to like, you have to schedule that day just for your mental clock, for your mental well-being. Like, all right, well, I've been grinding way too hard for these last like 6-7 days. Let me have a day or two, or, you know, I go 2 days on, 1 day off. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things you got to take care of, especially in the off season. You know, but during the season, there's an old saying that Bill would say, you know, he would sit and say, put everything in the drawer and deal with it after the season. Like, like he'd bring up this drawer like 4 or 5 times, like after week 14, like, all right, put it all in the drawer. We got to go out and do this. You know, we all understand you have bills, taxes. Like, let's just put it in the drawer and we'll worry about that after the season.
I like that. I'm going to start saying that. Yeah. I also like that you bring up like scheduling your downtime, because if you schedule like a shitload of downtime, then that's technically work.
True.
So you're not wasting.
True.
That's
it's
actually
a rest day.
It's a rest day.
Yeah.
If you just call it a rest Light day pack. And have it on your calendar, you can do whatever. You can be as much of a degenerate as you want that day. And it's like, listen, this is self-care today.
Mm-hmm.
You got to recharge the batteries.
Yeah.
Got to recharge the batteries. Sometimes you need, you know, just to chill and hop on a Warzone game or watch some TV, some Netflix or something, and just chill.
Yeah, you want to squat up in Warzone sometime?
I mean, I think we have, haven't we?
No? You and I have, yes.
I don't think
yes,
I've...
Yes, we used to play.
I don't think I've played with you yet. I've got a team going.
We got a...
Me, Hank, and Aaron Ripkowski are just shredding fools on Warzone recently.
Are you doing a Resurgence, the quads Resurgence? Are you doing an actual oldie map, the old map?
No, we're Verdansk. We're in Verdansk, big time.
I like to keep it in the... you know, the new, what is it?
Rebirth.
The Rebirth. Yeah, I like the Rebirth. It's quicker. It's just quicker. It's fast paced. You know, you guys can like respawn. There's a little different kind of strategy towards it.
It's
my
like
ADD
football.
Can't kick in.
Yeah, you get a lot of reps.
Football.
It's playoff football. You operate a different
playoff
speed.
Playoff football.
By the way, what do you think Bill Belichick is doing right this second? Because that's, I mean, you are a player, so like you said, you're, you know, working on your body, taking the recharge. He's got to be going crazy, right?
Oh, well, he's one of, like, the most extraordinary humans when it comes to, like, never really getting complacent and dealing with his time to make the team better. So, like, the fact that we're not in the playoffs right now, he's probably putting in extra time to evaluate going forward what we have to do. Like, it's a full self-scout. It'll have like everyone in the building working on every single player on the squad, on the practice squad, and evaluating every single thing that everyone does. And then that's how he goes into like the draft, and then going from the draft and the free agency. I mean, March 15th is when we start. you know, I think he's probably doing a lot of that, and you know, he's big into the player personnel thing as well. So
I got to assume that you're definitely rooting for the Buccaneers, right, out of the NFC.
You know, I'm just rooting for people to do well.
Interesting. Why aren't you rooting for the Bucs?
Interesting.
Hey, I only root for one team.
Who's that?
I only root for the San Francisco 49ers. Okay. That's who I grew up in the Bay Area.
What about in the AFC? Is there a part of you that you respect the Bills because you've been playing against the Bills, you know, twice a year for forever, and you'd like to see them do good? Or are you finding yourself rooting more against them because they are kind of one of your rivals?
I'm excited for the Bills. I'm super excited for that team, that city. I mean, I've gone there for a lot of years, and their fan base is crazy. It's everything that everyone thinks it is. It's one of the most extraordinary places to play. I mean, I've literally been on a field and seen a dildo thrown on the field. Like, it's unreal. Every time you go in there and you win, they have the most creative ways to flip you off that I've ever seen in my life. From everyone, I'm talking 6-year-olds, grandmas, parents. I mean, it's unbelievable to see them do well, man. I think it's cool for the league. I mean, I think it's great for the league that they're doing well. And you know, Daboll over there and that coaching staff, he was part of ours for a while, and we had a good relationship. You know, I've sat and talked with, you know, Beasley over the years, of just picking each other's brains and seeing Josh Allen, the way he's been able to play, in addition to Diggs. I mean, Diggs has been an absolute monster in that offense, and they're scheming up things for him, and they just got a good thing going. It'd be pretty cool to see a team like that going and do well.
Yeah. Yeah. What temperature does it officially suck to play football in? Where's the cutoff?
I would say when you start hitting in the teens. When you start getting teens, because then the wind brings you below. Like zero. Mm-hmm. Those are always the tougher ones when it's windy. I mean, if it's cold and it's still, it's fine. If it's cold and it's still, it's fine. It's more if it's cold and you have that wind and that wind's blowing. I mean, I remember we played a game in 13 against Denver. It was windy as heck. And it wasn't the coldest game. It was probably like maybe 28 degrees, but like the wind was ripping. And once you get that wind, It goes through all the layers of clothes, and it's miserable. The ball's hard, your hands hurt. So I would say, you know, that teen area is pretty tough.
Yeah, because
I still pick.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I still pick to play in the cold though over rain any day.
Really?
Or like a 37 degree rain is the worst thing to play in when it's so cold, but it's still really cold but it's wet. You'd rather go in the snow or have it cold.
In the snow, I would assume the snow always, like, people think whenever they see snow, like, oh, there's going to be no offense. But I always assume that the snow is good for the offense because you know where you're going and they don't. So you always get a little bit of a benefit in the snow, right?
I love the snow. I was a mudder. I'm a mudder. So, like, you know, if you have good balance and, like you said, you know where you're going. The defense is doing it backwards. I mean, I've loved playing in the snow over the years. We've had some cool games against Tennessee and Chicago. We went to Chicago, yep. Soldier Field, that was honestly one of my favorite games in my career, just because of it. I never really knew about Soldier Field, and they like redid it, and we had the snow game in Chicago, and we had I think we had the old unis on too. It was fun.
I've always heard that. I've heard that Bill likes to put the thermometer in the visiting team's hallway, so they have to see what the temperature is. And sometimes he'll make it like a few degrees extra cold, so they have to like look directly at it when they're going on the field. And he doesn't put that in your tunnel on the way out on the field. Is that true?
I do not know any of that. You know, I don't know if that's just regulation or anything.
He's got
you. We float.
He's
we
got
float
your
at a good. We float. At a good area, you know, we abide by everything that you can and cannot do.
How much time during
but that does bring that does bring up? I remember playing against the Raging Cajuns, and they had the similar thing like that back in college. And they're like, "You're 50 feet below sea level. Like, yeah. The temperature's hotter. Like, right in front of our locker room is but not New England.
How much time during the week do you have to just rehearse in front of the mirror the boilerplate talking points that Belichick has approved for you?
I like to do – I mean, I've been doing it for a while, so it takes me roughly about 5 to 10 minutes on a Tuesday after what we can and can't talk about. So it's usually around there. But I'm sure it's tougher for the younger guys.
Yeah. What speaking of your old games, what was your favorite game non-Super Bowl that you think back? Is there – or maybe this question. Do you ever – like if you dream or you find your mind going to a specific game over time, which game is it?
That's two games. My favorite game was definitely when we went to the AFC Championship in Kansas City.
I thought you were going to
say that. That's probably one of my all-time favorite games.
Because they just didn't guard you on third down, any third down. They just weren't guarding you.
Hey, I don't know. But I remember, you know, we went to like two or three AFC Championships prior to that in Denver and got beat. And there was like a stigma that we could only win, you know, at home and going there and playing. I mean, that team's an electric team. In an electric stadium. That place gets rocking. That was just like a very fun football game. Just the competitive level going back and forth. I mean, it was insane, honestly. I remember on that penalty, I always think about this. I forgot who it was, but on the penalty where Tom threw the pick and it was offsides, one of the safeties came up to me and said, "You guys had a hell of a year." Like, and I was sitting there and I'm like, fuck that, dude. Do we really just lose? And then I saw the flag.
It was D Ford, yeah.
It was, and I was like, holy moly. I literally saw like that year in front of my eyes of all the hard work and everything that you do for a season. I'm like, it just went to shit like that. And then we had like a second life. It was insane. That was a crazy cool game. And then I was really in 15 when we went to Denver, we were kind of banged up and we lost on a 2-point conversion. You know, that was a rough one that I think about a lot.
The air. That was the air one. Dave said, because we were giving him shit on the rundown, he said he forgot to account for the air. So maybe that's what happened. He just didn't – he forgot that it was mile high.
I'm not even going to lie, bro. We were sitting there. It was Peyton's, like, you know, later years, and we're like, Denver, January, it's going to be freezing. There's going to be snow. We're going to have crazy competitive advantage. Peyton can't, you know, hold the ball, this, that, which he could do, but we were just, you know, you always want things to go in your favor, at least what we thought was. And then it was a 75-degree, beautiful day, unreal. They ended up playing a great game. We were banged up and just couldn't make enough plays. But yeah, that one sticks out. I don't like that one.
I like how Big Cat phrased that question. Like, do you dream, like when you dream about football, do you actually dream about football?
I do. I have the same dream that I've been dreaming since I was like 18 year, or like 13 years old. There was this place in Santa Clara. I think it could have been Santa Clara High. We used to play this little Pop Warner team. And I remember I went up the sideline and I broke like a run. And I always want – and I remember talking to like this older football player. He was in high school and he told me to try to do like a stiff arm spin, like stiff arm him and then spin on him. And I didn't do it one time. And I think of that same play, like, I got to use this stiff arm spin at the sideline. Like, I still think about it, too. It's all right. It's gnarly.
Have you ever pulled it off in a game?
Never.
You got to do it. You got to keep playing until you do it. That's when you know that it's time to retire. That's future Julian, like in Interstellar.
Great White Buffalo.
Yeah. Walk off. Literally just walk off after that play.
Uh-huh.
And just be like, I'm done. I've accomplished everything.
The sideline stiff arm spin.
So I'm the fifth element, I see it, and then it just comes, or what?
No, so like future Julian is going to be pushing books off of a bookshelf, telling letting you know when it's time for you to retire. And it's going to be like, he's going to come to you during a play, and it's going to be set up perfectly. You're going to stiff arm a dude on the sideline, spin around him, gain a couple extra yards, maybe even get a touchdown. And then at that point, you'll know that it's time. Like, he'll send you a message from the future.
There has to be like, like something happened to the scoreboard. Because sometimes when you're running in the open field, you'll look at the scoreboard. So you'll look at the scoreboard. I always like to look to see in the rear view if you can, you know, you got to throw on the Jets or something. So something happens in there. You see something on the scoreboard and you pop out the spin.
We're going to keep
stiff arm spin.
Mm-hmm. We're going to make sure that this happens at some point for you.
It's got it.
Yeah.
It's got it.
Can we play a little word association here? I'm just going to say like two words at a time and then you just tell me what you think about those two words. All right. First one, Deshaun Watson.
Insane.
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 Carson Wentz. Just random words.
Mm-hmm.
How many words can I use?
As many as you want.
Whatever
actually.
You want.
Yeah.
Looking forward to the next opportunity.
Okay. Mitch Trubisky.
Mitch Trubisky.
That's good. That's actually a good analysis right there. Just his name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, Mitch Trubisky.
He is Mitch Trubisky.
Mitch Trubisky. Yep.
Jameis Winston.
Ooh, good one.
I mean, you're only as good as your last throw.
Oh! I think we found it. Yeah. Jameis to New England. It happened. There it is. Perfect.
I heard, saw that play. I knew you guys were going to go absolutely bananas over that whole thing.
Yeah, oh. It was a great throw.
How could you not? What would you do if you were in the huddle and your quarterback, whether it be Tom Brady or it was Cam Newton this year, tried to eat a W right in front of your face?
I would, you know, try to get the side of it.
Excited though.
Yeah.
You done
with that?
Yeah. Yeah, you're going to eat. Oh, you got some. There's still some meat on that bone. Well, let me get a little lick on that.
Is a W vegan? Because Cam Newton, he doesn't eat meat at all, right?
No, he does not eat meat.
Ooh. Okay. Billy Football thinks that makes him a bad quarterback. You know that, right?
This Billy Football, where's he at? Where is this guy?
He's not here.
We don't got him.
He's in the protocol.
Oh, is this
No, he's in the protocol. Yeah, he's in the protocol.
Is he fighting Canseco?
Yes. But he's currently in the protocol.
What protocol?
Listen,
not concussion.
Over the course of the week, there are certain steps that we take, and we look at every day as an opportunity to get better. Mm-hmm. And Billy is certainly looking at all those steps to get better right now.
Mm-hmm.
Next question.
When Billy's ready to be medically cleared, he'll be medically cleared. That's all we're going to say about that.
Day better than yesterday. He's just a day better than yesterday.
Yeah,
that's right.
Do you think? Yep. Are you worried about it? Do you think he can beat Canseco?
I don't know. I hope he doesn't get killed by Canseco.
I don't care if he does.
Canseco's a big. You know, he's a big lump of flaccid meat. He sucks.
So I don't know what Billy Football looks like because I listen to you guys.
Right.
So I really don't know. I have no clue what he looks like. Is he blonde?
Yes.
Yeah. What does he sound like? Describe how he sounds.
I didn't think he was like a blonde kid. I thought he was maybe like a short, like, brunette kid, like maybe a little pudgy.
You're talking about like, me. You're just describing me.
Yeah, both of us.
Nah, you have lighter hair. I'm talking like a real dark brunette.
He's like 6'2", no, 6'3", and...
Yeah, he doesn't look like this.
He's like 230 pounds. I think he's going to win. I really do because he's quick and he played in college. Well, kind of. He kind of played football. Well, no, he played football. He actually was. I'll send you a highlight. He was a beast.
I don't know, but Jose Canseco, I mean, he's a man.
But I mean, you went up against some big dudes yourself. You're undersized for a wide receiver for an NFL player. Like you know that it's not about the size of the dog in the fight. It's the size of the fight in the dog.
Fact.
Yeah, but the dog still has to have something in him. Like he's got to. Like I don't know Billy like that. He just seems like a good little kid. He seems young.
He is young, but he's also built different.
Like 17.
No, he's like he's his brain is 12, but his body is like 23. He ran a marathon with no training whatsoever. Just got on the treadmill and did it. So like he's a good athlete.
I mean. That's impressive. He seems like he knows all this stuff.
No.
For sure.
Yeah, he thinks that he knows. He knows a lot of words, but I don't think he knows what any of them mean sometimes.
I'm trying to find a video that I can, a highlight tape video that I can send to you that will hopefully change your opinion, and you'll be completely Team Billy Football.
Oh, I got a question for you.
I'm not Team Billy Football. I want Billy to do well, but I mean... I don't know. How old is Canseco now?
Like 54?
Like 100? 110?
I mean, he's getting old.
And I'm just gonna take a guess here, Jules. I don't think Canseco's on the TB12 method. I don't think he's skipping, you know, strawberries and ice cream and stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
Do you have
It'll
any,
be a good fight.
Do you have any advice for him, like as a scrappy, undersized dude? Like when you were going into a game and you knew that you were going to have to do a lot of run blocking and you had to set an edge out there and block a dude that was, you know, 70 pounds heavier than you, how would you prepare for that?
That's when you just take a teaspoon of cement, you let them drop, and you just got to go.
Mm-hmm.
Take a teaspoon of
cement.
You have to be careful with how you phrase that because Billy actually will ingest cement.
So cement, so a little cement.
Yeah. He's a big kid. I just saw a picture of him.
Yeah. Here, watch that video I just sent you, and we'll end with that. By the way, you're wearing a PH. What the hell's a PH? What is it, PH water?
Yeah, bro, Perfect Hydration. It's a... It's a great water company. Where is this? You sent it to me on the internet?
Yeah,
or
I just texted
Instagram?
You. I just texted you.
Text.
Yeah, I just texted you a video of Billy Football, and then you tell me if you think he can handle it.
Music selection is
it's his huddle video.
So yeah, it's a standard huddle soundtrack.
Is that one play?
Yeah. Searching for it. He's the quarterback.
There we go.
Yeah.
There we go.
You see him fucking truck that kid?
Truck stick.
Yep. That's Billy Football.
That just helped me out. That just helped me out right there.
Yes.
He's got it.
Yes.
He might have it.
We might need you to have a video because remember, Jules actually helped Hank in his fight sending a video pumping him up. So we might have to call on you to pump him up as well because I know he would get very excited about that.
How's old Hammer and Hank doing?
He's great. Hank, you want to chime in?
Yeah. Great.
He's great.
How you doing, Hank?
I'm great.
Where you been?
I've just been chilling, you know, doing my thing. He's in Verdansk with PFT.
He's taking a mental year off because the Patriots didn't make the playoffs. He's been very, you know, he's taking a mental year off.
It's a COVID year. It's not, you know, it's not a real year.
Yeah, 2020 was rough. Mm-hmm. It was a rough one.
But you're coming
2021.
Back.
2021. Yes.
Hank is
2021,
also,
baby.
Hank's also not retiring. So
yes. None of us are retiring.
Still
this
here.
This is the no retirement podcast. All right.
Stairway to Seven.
Yeah. There you go. Jules, thank you, man.
I just came up with that.
As always, we
Fuck
appreciate
you,
it, man.
Always.
Hank is just bashing Pittsburgh under his breath now.
Why? What happened with that?
He doesn't like
What's
the fact
Pittsburgh?
Because he thinks that New England is going to be the first franchise to ever get 7 Super Bowls.
So he says Stairway to Seven.
And Pittsburgh people think that they invented it, but they didn't.
That's a beef I don't know.
Yeah,
there we go.
Sure is. All right.
That's
well, thank you, Jules.
A beef you're not aware of.
Thank you, Jules. We're gonna
I'm not aware of that one.
We're gonna be watching for a stiff arm and a spin move on the sideline.
That's I love that.
Stiff
by the
arm.
Way, I yeah. love that so much because that is such a that was such a good peek into the difference between fandom and actually playing the sport. Like everyone who's listening is like, yeah, fuck you, Hank, from Stairway to Seven, and you're like, yeah, I have no idea what you guys are talking about. I just go and play the games, like, and win the Super Bowls.
Only three, bro. We don't win a lot.
All right. Yeah, you're the best, Jules. We appreciate it, man.
All right, fellas. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah.
Good to see you, buddy.
See ya.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
And now for something completely different.
Okay, we now welcome on a very, very special guest. It is Hall of Famer, one of the greatest pitchers of all time, Greg Maddux. Absolute legend. Greg, you are here because there's a golf tournament coming up. So January 21st to 24th at the Four Seasons Golf and Sports Club Orlando, the Diamond Resorts Tournament of Champions, $1.2 million purse. That's pretty nice. So that's coming up, and you can watch on the Golf Channel, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that 1.2 is for the women. I think the guys are playing for like 500,000. So
okay, perfect. I like that. And the tournament's raised almost $4 million for charity. So that's awesome.
Yeah, impressive. Yeah, real good event. A lot of fun. For me personally, it's good to reconnect with all the guys I used to play with and against, and also meet some guys from all the other sports as well. So it's a pretty fun event. I'm glad the COVID didn't take this one over, because it's something I've looked forward to the last couple of years.
Yeah, does Smoltz make you put this tournament on every year just so he can win and get another trophy and collect that $500,000 purse?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, he's pretty good, man. He was swinging good today. I know, today was fun. Got a chance to play with Ivan Smoltz. Greg Olson caddied for Smoltz. So it was a lot of fun being out there today.
That's great. So everyone, you can watch it on the Golf Channel and NBC actually on Saturday and Sunday. So I introduced you as one of the greatest pitchers of all time. I truly believe that. It's great to have you on. Talk some baseball, whatever else you want to talk about. I guess I don't even know where to start, because there's so many awesome Greg Maddux stories. Where should we start? I'm a little intimidated by you as a guest.
Because your legend has grown over the years, because I don't know how many people in our audience actually got to watch you pitch. I used to spend summers essentially just watching Braves games every single day. So I watched you pitch a lot. And there are a lot of like Paul Bunyan type rumors about you. So maybe we can start out by knocking some of those out. First one.
True or not true?
Yeah, true or not true. And then maybe expand on the story. I like that.
Yeah. Did you intentionally give up a home run to Jeff Bagwell one time?
Didn't intentionally give up a home run, but there are times where you try to have the hitter have some success off you, so you know he'll be sitting on it for the rest of the year. So I think, I had a coach that told me what a hitters remember, and they remember success. So, if they get you on a certain pitch, they're going to be sitting on it for a long time.
So the story goes that you essentially were like, I'm going to let him have a little success, knowing that I'll probably see him in the postseason. And when I see him in the postseason, he'll be looking for that pitch and I won't give it to him.
Well, hopefully that was the plan anyway, but it did it mostly in spring training. I think you tried to plant a seed in guys' heads in spring training and try to get away from it once the season starts.
I heard a story that you didn't even did you train in the off season? You just show up to spring training and your command would be there and you'd be like, all right, let's go. First time I'm throwing a ball since the playoffs last year.
No, I trained. Okay. I didn't throw a lot, but I took care of my shoulder. Had a real good physical therapist in Vegas. I went and saw him 4 times a week and learned how to take care of my arm and definitely tried to take care of my body in the off season. As far as the throwing goes, a little bit of old school, I'm going to kind of save my bullets for the season. And, we had enough time in spring training to get ready. I felt like I had enough time to get ready to throw 100 pitches just with the spring training going on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, there was another story out there about you that when you'd be facing off against like Gary Sheffield, who's an extremely intimidating hitter, I would imagine, going up against, you would sometimes be like, you know what, I'll let him get to the warning track on me as long as he doesn't hit a home run.
That's not true. I had one with Sheff where, again, it was spring training, and Sheffield loved the ball inside. And if he got beat inside, he was not going to get beat inside ever again. And I remember telling Chipper, he was playing third base at the time, and I go, hey, Chip, man, I'm going to throw Sheffield all fastballs in today. So if you want to back up and get in left field, go ahead, because he's going to rocket something down there. But no, I think Sheffield was our right fielder once, and I think it was a different hitter. And I knew that if I executed my pitch, that hitter would hit the ball right underneath that 390 sign in right center. I knew he didn't have enough to get over it. And I remember asking Chef, hey, you see that 390 sign? If it lands, 5 feet in front of it, it should be an easy play for you. So I think that's kind of where that story came from. It wasn't against Chef. Chef could hit it over that 390 sign. He was good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of hitters that had just enough power to reach the warning track to right field. And, as long as they didn't pull it, you can keep them in the park.
Did you remember every pitch that you threw? Because I also read a story where you, once everything became computers and you had a printed out script of like every pitch you had thrown, and you went up to someone and you're like, hey, this is wrong. Like, it says right here that I threw a fastball to Tony Gwynn in 1993. That was actually a changeup. Like, what's going on?
Yeah, it really wasn't like that. I think a lot of it was they had that guy, what was it called? The inside game or something. They had some kind of scouting thing set up where they tracked all the pitches and everything. And this was late in my career. And you know, come to find out, it was a bunch of college kids in Florida watching the games on TV and doing it. And, you know, that they would get some pitches wrong on that. I didn't remember every pitch I threw. I don't think anybody could do that. But, you know, I watched a lot of video. I relied more on video and getting my own scouting reports than, the inside pitch. That's what it was called. And, you know, they just had all the stats on there. And, you know, you'd pick your nuggets out of it. There were some good ones on there. You know, I remember reading some of them, and, you know, the guy hit 080 on changeups until strike one. But after strike one, if you threw him a changeup, he hit like something like 520 on changeup. So, you know, you could know and pick out stuff like that and use it to your advantage. But, you know, again, the hitter had the same thing too. I think everybody knew I was going to throw him a fastball away and a changeup. So, you know, it's pretty much strength against strength.
This is a testament, though, to the legend of Greg Maddux, because you say, and you're right, you know, it'd be impossible to remember every single pitch. You threw so many of them. But if there were ever a guy to be able to remember every single pitch, it would be Greg Maddux. Now, was there ever a pitcher or a hitter that you saw that thought the game the way that you did and used, you know, because I think you would say, maybe you wouldn't because you're humble, but the way you thought the game, the way you saw the game was almost like a superpower compared to your competition. Is there anyone that you went up against that's like, that guy clearly was thinking the game on a different level, the level that I'm on?
A hitter?
A hitter or a pitcher.
Yeah. I mean, there were a lot of guys you played the guessing game with. You know, I didn't, I really trusted what I saw. You know, I didn't have a game plan scripted out. I mean, I had an idea what the hitter's strength and weaknesses were, but, I always trusted my eyes. You know, hitters can change in a heartbeat. You know, you could see them move up in the box. You can see them move back. You could see their hips flying open. I mean, I really trusted what I saw on the field. And, you know, I kind of pitched off my last pitch, probably more than anybody. You know, ball or strike, regardless, I think each pitch kind of sets up the next pitch. And sometimes the hitter will do something that will make you, you know, maybe throw it to a different area. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just a lot of trust in what I saw. You know, I had a pretty good follow through where I was able to see pretty good. And, you know, once the ball left my hand, I was kind of watching the hitter more than I was the ball going to the plate.
I read one time that you had like three different circle changeups. Is that true? Are there three different ways to throw a circle change?
Yeah, I mean, you know, changeup, it's kind of a feel pitch. And every 5 days, you're kind of throwing it different. You're just trying to find the right feel for it. And, you know, I had one circle change, but I had about five swing thoughts to go with it before I threw it. And it was just a matter of finding what thoughts right for that day. You know, I knew as the game would go on, I always felt like my changeup would get better.
So we were talking about hitters. You won four in a row Cy Youngs, which has never been done. Eight-time All-Star, Hall of Famer. Tony Gwynn, though. Tony Gwynn hit .415 off you and never struck out. 107 plate appearances.
What? Well, I struck him out once.
You struck him out once.
Call.
What was it about him? Was he like, that's really the only guy? And we can talk about Barry Bonds too, because you said you tried to pitch to Barry Bonds once and you realized it wasn't for you. But Tony Gwynn, what was it about him that would made him so special?
Well, he can hit a two hopper to the left fielder with the best of them, and no question, he was a very good hitter. Probably the best pure hitter that I played against. Barry's easily the best hitter I've played against. You know, there's a little bit of a difference. You know, he was hitting .485. I got him down 60 points late. So
there you go.
You know, my whole philosophy was, if I can keep it in front of the outfield, better than the guy I'm facing, then I'm going to win. And, you know, Tony Gwynn, Barry Bonds, as a young pitcher, that was when I learned how, you know, you don't beat hitters, you beat lineups. And, you know, you have to pick your fights. And, you know, I didn't want to give up a single to left with Tony Gwynn, but I sure gave up a lot of them. You know what I mean? But try to keep it in front of the outfield. Make sure you get Tony Fernandez out, Ken Caminiti, and then you can still beat that team with Tony standing on first or second base.
Do you think that's a lost art in today's game, like beating a lineup, not a hitter? Do you think guys are thinking that way, or is it a lot more like mano-a-mano and trying to strike guys out? Because we've seen, you know, the game has changed a lot. Home runs, strikeouts, you know, guys pitching 100 miles an hour. Do you think that's lost?
You know, I try to keep it in front of the outfield. I see a lot of pitchers today trying to make a miss. And, you know, they go strike one down when they want to. And then, you know, you see a lot of balls out of the zone. You know, I like to attack the strike zone a little bit more just so I could pitch deeper into games. You know, I really believe and still do today that the hardest count to hit in is 0-2. And so why not throw a strike and make them hit 0-2? You know,
I agree.
You see guys spray one up top, bounce two in the dirt, and then they miss, and now it's 3-2, and the hitter's back in the count. So, you know, just a different philosophy now. I think if I threw 95 with a wicked slider like half these guys do today, you know, I probably would try to strike more guys out too. You know, I just wasn't who I was or what I did.
Was there a point in your career where you thought about going for it, where you were like, you know what, if I can get 3-4 extra miles per hour on my fastball, I can become a dominant power pitcher? And you kind of had to reel yourself back and say, hey, this is what you do best. Why don't you just become the best at all time at it?
Yeah. You know, I felt my fastball was good enough. You know, I did throw it hard. It might not have came out fast, but I put a lot of effort into my fastball. I think I was taught that movement and location are more important than velocity. I was taught that being able to change speeds was more important than velocity. So, you know, I just came up with a different coach. I learned that in high school when I was just getting started. And, you know, I remember my coach told me at the time, he goes, you know, you're going to throw hard enough to get drafted, but you're going to need movement to get to the big leagues and win in the big leagues. And, you know, I'll never forget that day. I was 16 years old and I was trying to make it sink. And very fortunate to have that guy in my corner back then. His name was Ralph Meter, by the way. He actually died my junior year in high school, but I spent about 2 years with him. And he kind of laid down the foundation for me. And, you know, it was all about movement and location. It was never about velocity.
That's what our guy Dan Heron says. Future Hall of Famer Dan Heron.
Mm-hmm.
You agree that Dan Heron's a Hall of Famer, right?
I have to look him up. I know he was good back in the day. I know, didn't he win 20-some games with Arizona? Am I mistaken?
With the A's, too. And I think he has the lowest ERA in World Series history, yes. Minimum of 6 innings pitched.
The lowest.
That's not a cherry-pick stat or anything, but... yeah, he does. Speaking of the Hall of Fame, what the hell was up with the 2.8% of voters? Are you like, that was a complete slap in your face. You should have been a unanimous Hall of Famer. That's complete bullshit.
Well, thank you. I mean, honestly, you're happy to get in. You know, I'm surprised I didn't piss off more writers than I did, but, you know, I was, it's a pretty big honor just to get in there to be able to go there and walk down from the hotel down where you have breakfast and see all the guys you looked up to. You know, I grew up a huge Reds fan. So I remember walking down the stairs going into breakfast and I saw Joe Morgan and Tony Perez, Johnny Bench. And, you know, those are the guys that I idolized growing up, and pretty special feeling.
Yeah.
So, you know, the 2%, you know, what is it? Water off a duck's back or whatever? It is what it is.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I hate those
They're
guys.
Idiots. Yeah. What was the process like for finding out that you got in?
I got a call from Jeff Idelson from the Hall of Fame and, you know, said you made it. You know, popped open a bottle of wine, had a drink, and, you know, got ready to get inducted the following year or the following summer.
Of all the numbers that you have in the crazy statistics, is it safe to say that your stat that you went 10 straight seasons with at least one stolen base, never getting caught stealing, are you most proud of that? Because that's a hilarious, and yeah. It feels like that was a Greg Maddux, like, you knew that in the back of your mind, like, I got to steal a base, and I can't get caught stealing.
You know, I never really got caught stealing a base, okay? I did get thrown out at third base twice because Chipper struck up. It was first and second, 3-2 count, so, you know, Bobby sent the runners, and, you know, Chipper struck out, and they threw me out at third by 10 feet, but, you know, it was fun. It was fun. It was fun being a baseball player. You know, I'm not a fan of the DH. I get it, but I'm glad I never had a DH. You know, I enjoyed playing the game. I enjoyed hitting, running the bases, and all that stuff. It was actually fun. It was a good time.
Yeah, and you're all-time coat guy on the base path, which is a lost look. We need pitchers to start doing that more.
Yeah, that's back in the day, back in the 80s.
Yeah.
Chicago was cold, man. You had to have a jacket on out there.
Did that actually help? Because I remember you would not only wear the coat on the base path, but in between innings, you would just put one arm into the coat just to keep your arm loose and warmed up for the next inning. Would that actually make a difference?
Kind of, I don't know. Just maybe superstition or whatever. Who knows? I think, you know, just more comfortable with something on it than, you know, sitting there. You know, especially if it was windy. You know, you don't really want the wind blowing on it, and you know, just. What it is what it is. It's no big deal. Probably superstition more than anything.
Leo Mazzoni, the pitching coach, he was a big-time rocking guy, if you've never seen him. He was always moving back and forth throughout the entire game. Did that make you nervous?
I mean, it kind of bugs you a little bit. I mean, you're trying to watch the game, and the guy's walking in front of you. So, but, you know, he did it every day. You got used to it. You know, it was really weird my first year over there when he's up there rocking. But, you know, you get used to it over time, and you know, Leo, good coach, some good philosophies about pitching. You know, enjoyed pitching for him as well.
Have you thought about being a manager, knowing that you know so much about the game and all these stories about how you saw the game?
No, not really. I think there's a lot more to it than that. I think you know, you got to be a leader. You got to get along with players. You got to handle the media. There's a lot of responsibilities besides just the X's and O's. You know, I've always enjoyed the X's and O's. I did do a little part-time coaching and enjoyed that. I was at UNLV the last 4 years doing that as well. So, I mean, you know, I do like being around the game. I do like watching it. I enjoyed coaching just on a part-time level. You know, I also enjoy being retired. It's nice to be retired and kind of do what you want to do every day.
You say that like you wouldn't be a great manager with, like, the clubhouse and the media. Like, you're great with the media. You're great. I mean, there's legendary stories that we can get into of Greg Maddux, the greatest pranker of all time. Are you just being humble? Like, you would be an incredible manager at the big league level.
Well, you have to, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? I mean, you have to be able to connect with all the players, you know, and manage each and every player separately. You got to handle your coaching staff. I mean, it's a lot of time. It's a lot of responsibility. You know, that's something I don't think I enjoy being retired as well. You know, I enjoy the game, but at the same time, I also enjoy being retired. I mean, I played for 25 years and, you know, missed half of my kids growing up, and it was kind of nice to catch up, you know, in their later teenage years and everything. So, you know, I'm not a good enough people person, I think, to be the kind of manager that I would like to be.
I don't know about that, because Big Cat alluded to some of the pranks, and we had Tom Glavin on the show. He was one of our very first guests that we ever had, and he told us a lot of great Greg Maddux stories. Not sure how many of them are 100% true. There was one, I think, where you
probably made up.
You cleaned yourself with someone's undershirt. I'll put it that way. And then
that was true. Yeah, he said I wiped my butt on Walt Weiss's shirt.
Yeah,
you know, yeah, that one. See, I don't remember doing that, and especially to Walt, because I liked Walt. Walt was just a class act and a good guy, and I'm like, there's no way I would ever do that to him. So. Somebody could have done it, and I got blamed for it. Uh-huh. But I need to ask Walt about that the next time I see him and say, hey, Walt, is this true? Did I really do this to you? Because, I mean, I know, you know, as we get older, we forget a lot of stuff. But I don't remember that.
You're a bad liar. You absolutely wiped your ass.
Yeah, you absolutely did. We also had Andre Dawson on the show, and he's told a story about you pissing in a hot tub.
Well, okay, that was true, but that was just a joke.
What about pissing on other guys? Like, I feel like you were probably the most fun guy to be around in the clubhouse.
Only if they got me first. I would get even. I would never start it, but I would get even. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was kind of thing, you know. Right. It is a different world back then. You do that now, they might put you in jail for 2 weeks, you know? It's just...
That's true. Also, the clubhouse is like... I mean, the Cubs clubhouse, up until like 3 years ago, you probably could piss on everyone because the showers were like right next to each other. So that probably helped with the pranks, the proximity that everyone had together in old clubhouses.
Yeah, just stupid fun, really, is all it was. You know, guys having a good time and... you know, I mean, there were some scenes in there and, you know, we had good times.
Guys being dudes. I think you'd be the perfect teammate.
What was the worst that anybody ever got you?
I think Blauser got me a couple times, you know, he would get you when you're in the crapper. He'd do something to you when you're in there and you could never see it coming. So,
Damn. Speaking of legendary stories, is the Brad Penny story real? So the story goes that you knew Brad Penny's pitching better than Brad Penny, and you once called an entire game for him, and I think he shut out the Cubs, and you were calling every pitch for him from the dugout.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I had just gotten traded from the Cubs to the Dodgers, and he was in it and, you know, asked if I'd do it, and I said, yeah, I'll do it. I enjoy doing it. I'll do it. And, yeah. And, you know, he threw every pitch right where he was supposed to throw it. I mean, it was pretty impressive how well he located not only his fastball, but his breaking ball and changeup that day. I mean, it was a pretty solid game. So, I mean, his command was so good. Even if you screwed up and called the wrong pitch, he still put it in a place where they couldn't hit it.
One of my favorite rivalries to watch was you against the umpire's brain. So you would get some strikes called that other pitchers wouldn't get, but it's because you kind of like lead them into calling those strikes. And then I'm sure at some point in your career, the umpires heard all this and they're like, we need to call Greg a little bit tighter. So then you had to like overcome the umpires being afraid to call those outside pitches or those pitches inside on a left-handed batter. How would you manipulate the umpire's brain over the course of a game?
You know, I wouldn't. I never did that. I had my catcher set up in a certain spot and I tried to throw it there. And, you know, we took a lot of abuse for that. Not only me, but, you know, a couple other guys on the team. And I remember charting pitches like for Glavin and Smoltzy. And, you know, if the umpire was given, you know, 2 or 3 inches off one side of the plate, they would throw it there. If the other pitcher did it, the umpire would still call it. But the thing was, we would throw like 7 or 8 pitches out there and the other pitcher would throw 2 or 3. And then, you know, we would get accused of getting more pitches than the other guy. And it came down, we were making more pitches than the other guy. I mean, the strike zone's the same for both sides. And, you know, I mean, a lot of that left in the mid 90s, you know, I think there were certain players that had different strike zones. There were certain pitchers that had different strike zones, but, you know, that left probably in the 90s. So, you know, Tony Gwynn was the hardest guy in the world to get strike one on, you know, and the pitcher comes up, you could throw it anywhere and get strike one. So there was a different set of standards back in the 80s, early 90s, but it kind of got cleaned up pretty quick.
What did you think of the entire Astros controversy and, you know, the, like, obviously they got caught cheating. What was your take on it? Were you mad because it's like, hey, I did it with my brain. I didn't need, you know, computers and you know, video cameras in the outfield and stuff. Like where'd you ultimately land on that?
That's a different way of cheating. I mean, you know, if a pitcher's tipping pitches or a hitter's tipping location or one of your fielders is moving too early and giving away pitches, that's baseball. That's one thing. You know, you got to be able to disguise your pitches. But, you know, to have some guy on a computer and a button sitting in the video room and seeing what the catcher's putting down. I mean, there's no place for that in the game. That's cheating. That's cheating. That's not looking for an edge. That's flat out cheating. And, I was pretty disgusted with it. I'm not going to lie to you. I think it's a shame that they would do that. You know, I know you hear growing up, if you're not cheating, you're not trying, but I mean, that's a whole new way to cheat right there. You know, I would think it's, you know, if you're going 70 and a 65, it's not that big a deal. But, you know, you start going 100, it becomes a big deal. And I think they just kind of went way overboard on that.
Do you think you would have still been able to get the entire Astros lineup out? Peak Greg Maddux, sure. Astros cheating.
Probably not. I don't think anybody could have got them out if they know what's coming. They had good hitters, too. It's not like they needed to cheat. They had some pretty good hitters.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, it was a shame it happened. You know, I kind of feel bad for the Dodgers, you know, for that.
Yeah.
Is it when you're looking at a opposing batter and you're trying to get inside their head and figure out what pitch they're sitting on, how much of that did you use to rely on the study that you put in before the game, and how much based on like their body language or the situation? Like, would you try to get actually inside their head and be like, this is Aubrey Huff, he's dumb as shit, he's going to be sitting on a fastball?
Well, yeah, I mean, you thought that way sometimes, but mostly you wanted to know how the hitter saw the ball coming out of your hand. And, you know, if I knew how he saw the ball coming out of my hand, I know I could throw cutters, sinkers, and changeups all kind of through the same spot and have one pitch end up in three different places. So, that was kind of how I looked at it. So a lot of it, that's when I said it goes pitch to pitch based on the last pitch, what you throw next. A lot of it has to do with where did he see that last pitch come out of my hand at, and how can I throw that pitch again and have it be something different? That was kind of what I was trying to do.
So the quote that I alluded to earlier about Barry Bonds, which is very funny, you said, how do I pitch to Bonds? Very simply, I did not. Tried it once, wasn't for me.
Yeah, no, he was the easiest guy in the league to pitch to. I mean, because you throw him fastballs away, and if it mattered at all, you just walked him. So he was like, no stress. That dude was so easy to pitch to. Hey, it's his fault. It's his fault for, you know, being as good as he was. But, yeah, I mean, you know, the big thing with Barry Bonds is, again, it goes back, you know, you got to get the guy out before him and the guy out after him. So. So, you know, look at the year Jeff Kent had that one year.
Yeah.
You know, and Jeff Kent was a pretty good player. And, you know, he got everybody after Barry. And also, you know, there's kind of the Barry Bonds effect. You know, if you're a pitcher and you're out there and you're facing the best player in the league, as soon as that at bat's over, you kind of go, okay. And the next at bat kind of sneaks up on you. So I think, you know, you have to be very aware of after you have a matchup like that you don't let your guard down before the next guy steps in.
What was your mindset as you were pitching during a game? Were you one of those guys that goes out there and you're nervous, you have to chug Pepto-Bismol before your appearance, and you use those nerves, or were you calm?
Both. You know, I think a lot of nerves and, you know, you're a lot of calmness as well. So I think, you know, you'd have to fight through the nerves some games, and some games you wouldn't. Some days you'd be calm. But, you know, I tried to stay calm on the days I pitched. You know, I didn't try to come to the park and put my game face on and be Johnny Tough Guy and all that like you see some guys be. You know, I was who I was, and, you know, I try to keep it as simple as possible. If I could just locate and change speeds, I think I'll be okay.
Mm-hmm. What are you most proud of? Let's just call it your Cy Young Awards, or the season that you hit, was it 224?
Well, I mean, I'm most proud of winning the World Series in 95. I mean, that to me, that was the highlight of, you know, my career. You know, the Cy Youngs are cool. The Gold Gloves are cool. Hitting home runs, that's way cool. I mean, it's pretty cool hitting a home run. That's probably cooler than stealing the base. But nothing tops that ring. I mean, when you get a chance to share success with, you know, your teammates, your coaches, your neighbors in Atlanta, you know, that you live around with all season, and you know, just be able to share something with the whole city was pretty cool.
So this question sucks, so I'm just going to preface it with it. But it is a something we talked about actually this week with Drew Brees retiring. Is there a part of you that looks back on that Braves the 90s and winning all those division titles and being like, man, we should have had one more. Like, we should have had one or two more.
Absolutely. You know, it would have been nice to win four or five. You know, I thought there were a couple years where we were easily the best team, but we didn't get it done. And, you know, it was a tough pill to swallow. You know, the 14 straight division titles and to be a part of 11 of those is pretty special. You know, I think that's never been done in any sport. That's something to feel pretty proud about. You know, it's kind of hard to complain when, you know, you go to the postseason every year and you don't get a ring. You know, it's pretty special just to go to the postseason. It's not as easy as we made it look. And, you know, I'd love to have a few more rings, but, you know, I'm happy I got one.
Mm-hmm. If you were to take one guy besides you, you can't use yourself. If you've got Smoltz, Glavin, and Avery all at their peaks, and you got one game to win, who would you send out there?
Ooh, that's a tough one. You couldn't pick a wrong guy, really. I mean, all three answers are right. You know, I think, you know, flip a coin between Smoltz and Glav, you know. I think Avery was pretty good, too. I mean, that's a tough question. I mean, you know, I think looking back at it, Smoltz probably had the better track record in the postseason. But then again, Glav did win the deciding game and threw a shutout,
yeah,
you know, to get the World Series ring. So, you know, they're both pretty special pitchers.
What about expanding that? What about expanding that to any pitcher that was in the big leagues when you pitched in your career? Who's the one guy that you'd be like, that's the guy I'd put out there?
Probably Mariano Rivera.
Okay.
You know, I know he's a closer. If you had to pick a starter.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, for my money, I always thought the best pitcher was Clemens coming up. You know, the guy that I played with in my era. You know, I thought he was a complete dominant pitcher. I think he had not only the great stuff, the great God-given ability to throw, you know, fastballs and sliders and command. I thought he had really good game plans as well. I thought he was a very good pitcher that had great stuff. And, you know, he was just kind of known for blowing guys away and everything. But I think he was a complete pitcher. I saw him, you know, pitch to both sides of the plate, up, down, hard, soft, in, out. It was pretty impressive.
I would take Tim Wakefield at his best. Like on one of the nights when, I don't know, what the humidity was just right and the ball was dancing. It was impossible.
Yeah, he was about to hit.
Yeah, did you ever think to yourself, like, maybe I should give this knuckleball a shot?
I mean, I tried to throw a couple. I know my hands were too small, so I could never really do it. Bit my fingernails and had small hands, so that pitch kind of wasn't for me.
Bad combo.
Your fingernails.
What about – yeah. So I think I remember you having a special catcher. There would be, like, Maddox catcher nights when Javi Lopez would take a night off. Did that ever piss Javi off? Was he ever like, hey, man – I'm not chopped liver. No, I'm pretty good.
No, not at all. You know, my first year with Javi, I mean, I won 20 games with Javi. And then come up the following year, and Bobby said that he wanted Javi to catch like 140 games a year, something like that, or 120 games a year, I think is what it was. And he said if he gave Javi my games off, he would only have to find him like 10 more off days during the season. So that was kind of the whole thing about that. That was Bobby managing 160 games, not just for that night. And, you know, so I always got the backup guy. And, you know, it worked out good. You know, you start to develop really good relationships with your catcher that way. And, you know, he was as fired up to play as I was because we both sat on the bench for the last 4 days.
Yeah.
And you're missing the other point is that you actually proved that you could catch Greg Maddux with your eyes closed. Like that actually is something that was proven.
We did do that one day in the bullpen in San Francisco, but I was with the Padres then, and we were just screwing around and having fun at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon one day. And God, I'm trying to remember the guy, some crazy Australian guy, you know, and
Kyrie Irving.
It took about 4 or 5 throws before he finally caught one.
Yeah. So there was a guy standing. There was a guy standing a few feet. There was a guy standing a few feet from the catcher, and he would say now to when the catcher should close his mitt. And after 2 or 3 throws, he was able to do it where you would throw it exactly where it needs to be, and the guy would say now, and the catcher would actually literally catch Greg Maddux with his eyes closed.
Yeah, he did it. It was pretty cool. It was a lot of fun. I remember the first one I threw, hit him in the glove, and it bounced off. And then I about hit him in the kneecap, and then I whistled one right over his head. And then I think the fourth one he actually caught. So it was pretty cool.
That's awesome. I remember you being a big cover your mouth when you're talking to the catcher guy. So when you'd have your meetings at the mound, like some guys just cover their mouth. You got in there like you were eating popcorn out of it. It covered your entire face. Do you think that that batters are actually like able to sit back there and read your lips?
Curtis Pride could. Do you remember Curtis Pride, the deaf guy that played Montreal? But yeah, there would be meetings on the mound, and then he would go tell the manager what they said. So, I think you can read some lips. You know, you could see, you know, fastball in, change up away, or, you know, curveball, whatever, if you can read lips. So it was just kind of a way of guarding against that. You know, you get paranoid out there sometimes.
Yeah. How many times would you be pulled from a game or have the manager come out and try to take you out of the game, and you were able to successfully tell him, like, no, I'm staying in this game. You're not taking me out.
Probably zero. I think my managers were pretty good. I always got the benefit of a doubt, I would always tell my managers or suggest to them that, look, I'll lie for you, never to you. Okay. If you're going to come out and ask me how I'm doing, I'll tell you the truth. And if I think I can get the next hitter out, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm going to take ego out of it and give you an honest answer because I want to win. I want to win my games. And sometimes you're not good enough to win your games, and maybe your teammates can win them for you. So I never lied to my managers, never had to talk them in or out of anything, just give an honest opinion. And I think I got pulled from a game once that I was kind of pissed I got taken out of.
Bobby Cox was an all-time great, too. And I could watch him, and I could tell when he was feeling extra spicy that day, he'd start to get into an argument with the umpire in, like, the top of the first. Were there days when you could just see Bobby trotting around and you're like, Bobby wants to get tossed today?
Yeah. We used to try to call how many pitches into the game before he yells at the umpire. And the numbers were 2, 3, 5. It was going to be in the first inning. It was no matter what pitch it was. He had one game where it was the first pitch of the game, you know? So, that was just Bobby being Bobby, cheering for his guys. He was always in your corner. Loved playing for him. I think all the guys loved playing for him. Wasn't just the pitchers. I think the hitters enjoyed playing for him as well. And he knew how to treat people the right way.
All right. So this has been awesome. We really appreciate it. I have one more stat for you. From July 1993 to May 2000, you started 213 games for the Braves, and you only had 212 walks. I love these stats because they're like, I don't think we'll see them ever again. These types of, that type of command.
I heard that one. Yeah, that's a good one. I don't think they should be intentional walks in there, though, honest with you.
I agree. I'm sure there's intentional walks
in there. A lot of guys. Of intentional walks, because how many times are you walking the eighth place hitter to get to the pitcher, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't think those should count, but they count them. But I'm a pitcher.
All right, well, Greg, this has been so much fun. We really appreciate it. Legend, you're a recurring guest now, so you have to come on whenever we ask you, just so you know, that's part of your contract. But everyone check out the Diamond Resorts Tournament of Champions. It is this weekend. You can watch on Golf Channel and NBC.
I got one last question for you. This is more just like asking you to rate Big Cat's goatee. You were a pitcher in the mid-90s. You saw the best pitching goatees of all time. I think it was mandated, I'm pretty sure, that if you were a Leaf pitcher, you had to have the Van Dyke. Scale of 1 to 10. Or like a scale of Steve Bedrosian to Mark Wohlers. Just rank Big Cat's goatee. Get good luck there. I think he might be frozen. He's pretending to be frozen.
Wait, whose goatee am I ranking? You're kind of cutting out on me a little bit.
This is Big Cat's goatee.
Oh, there we go. Eh.
Eh.
Kind of like a little thing. Like a fake Steve Bedrosian, maybe.
He said fake Steve Bedrosian. But that's not bad because Bedrock had,
you know what,
he had
though?
A bush on his face.
That's just Mad Dog being Mad Dog. Yeah. It's just guys busting each other's balls. I got it. We're teammates now.
Yeah. Hey, it's pretty cool what you guys are doing for the small businesses, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, thank it's you. Been Very awesome. Cool. It's been awesome to watch. But we really appreciate you coming on. Yeah. They've been, all of those videos are incredible.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. Appreciate it.
All righty. Thank you.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
All right. Firefest. Great Friday show, by the way. Great Friday show.
It was a Friday show.
Friday show. My apologies last week. I did have a bad gambling weekend, so because of the lack of Friday. So just the programming. We'll all be in Detroit this weekend. Make sure you watch us. We'll be on live stream during the games. And then we're going to be back here in a couple weeks for the Super Bowl. Like I said, we're going to try to get Dan Campbell. Why haven't we just called him Man Campbell?
Man Campbell's good, too. I've called him Man Campbell.
Okay, so Man Campbell, and then also Dan maybe Tara. We're trying, if anyone's listening, we're trying to get PFT's most overrated coach of all time on the podcast, Tom Izzo, which would be electric. So
they have a month named after him, according to Rothstein.
Yeah, that's
January,
true.
February, it's, Izzo, April, May. That's what his tweet is, right, when they win.
Which actually is kind of perfect. Rothstein didn't even realize that he kind of negged himself on that, because the Final Four is always in April.
Yeah, that's true. And that's exactly why people are saying this type of stuff about Izzo, is because he's not named after the championship month. He always,
right.
Yeah, sure, he'll win the first two rounds of the tournament. And by the way, my take on Izzo is, it's a pre-take. I'm squatting on the take. I'm not saying that he's overrated. I'm just saying people one day soon, eventually, will start saying that Tom Izzo is overrated.
That was just a simple reminder, because if we do interview him, I want you to have to say that to his face.
I will.
It'll be very funny. Yeah, I know you will. All right, Firefest of the week. Let me start. So I flew to Detroit today. I am so out of practice in traveling. I did the following things. I forgot to pack deodorant, toothbrush, underwear. Not even a single pair of underwear. And then on top of all of that, I went to the airport.
What did you
pack? Dude,
When did you pack?
I packed this morning. I packed everything else. I have like 7 sweatshirts, jeans, a couple pairs of shoes, socks. And then I just was going through my bag when I got here, and there just wasn't underwear where the underwear was supposed to be. So I did all that. And then when I was at the airport, I sat down. I got there way too early because I'm out of practice. I was there like an hour and a half early for my flight. Sat down, ate some lunch, got up, just left my coat in the booth, and just like my winter coat. So I don't have that anymore either.
Detroit's not that cold, right?
Yeah, right. I'm so out of practice of like doing anything but going from my apartment to the office and back to my apartment that I have to relearn how to act in society. So yeah, that sucked a lot.
That's tough. Socks are the one I always forget, but underwear. Underwear, that's a tough one to forget. So have you gone to the store yet, or are you just going to go free ball?
I'm gonna go to the store after this. And I agree with you. Socks, it feels like you can buy socks, and it's not really much of a difference. Buying all new underwear, I'm going to feel off.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be like starchy. It's going to have the fuzz on it because you can't wash it before you put it on. When you buy
it's
socks,
it's not going to be MeUndies. Yeah.
I actually think that when, like, the only socks that I've purchased in the last probably 10 years are socks that I've bought out of town when I've forgotten my old socks. So it's good. It's a good excuse to re-up on brand new pairs of socks. I might just not bring socks with me just so I can get some new tube ones.
There we go. All right, what do you got, PFT?
My Fyre Fest is I still have a Christmas tree in my house.
Ooh.
So it's, what is it, the 22nd of January right now? Now, Grant, I did pay $300 for the Christmas tree, so I'm getting my money's worth. Right now it's like a birthday tree. That's what I'm telling myself. But it's in bad shape. It's in really bad shape. And if you have a Christmas tree that far into January, you can't just take it out to the curb, because they've done the Christmas tree collection.
I don't think that they do. They don't just pick up trees if you leave a tree on the sidewalk all year round. So now I have to figure out how to get somebody to come to my apartment and get my tree from me, and then I have to deal with the shame of, yeah, I still have my tree.
Why wouldn't you just plant it?
In my apartment or outside?
No, outside. You're not throwing it away. Just plant it outside.
There's really no grass near my apartment.
There's got to be those little wells, like, you know, on the street. You know what I'm saying?
A manhole.
Like dog's piss.
A manhole.
No, not the manhole.
I can take the manhole off
your tree.
And then plant the tree in the sewer.
Plant your tree and commemorate it to Tommy Lasorda. We'll do a whole fucking thing for it.
I'm down for that. I'm all absolutely right,
so
down because I don't know what else to do with it.
We're going to plant this tree.
One time in like April, I lived on a highway and we had taken our tree out like to the side yard, and then we got a notice from the homeowners association. So I had to take this tree and run across three lanes of a highway out to the median. I just threw the tree into the median and then ran back into my house. So every day for like the next 6 months, I saw my dead just skeleton of a Christmas tree sitting in the middle of the highway. It's pretty cool.
And people almost crashed every day.
No, I weighed it down. I actually did kind of plant it in a way. I wedged it. It was more of a wedge in
between. Oh, it was a grass
boulders.
Median. Okay, got it.
No, no, it wasn't. Okay. I didn't just throw it onto a concrete barrier and then run back. It was like a significant strip of land, and
got
I wedged it into some rocks before somebody came and took it.
All right, Hank.
I have a couple. My first one is I didn't make any hilarious Bernie Sanders sitting memes.
Oh, yeah.
That meme burned out pretty quickly.
I lost sleep over that last night.
Was that the fastest a meme has ever been used out?
Yeah. It has to be.
I was sick of it
after 5 minutes.
Yeah. Everyone, fucking our colleague B.W. Carlin had posted someone did a painting of it like 2 hours after. Like, who the fuck has paint just lying around to paint a meme? I guess painters do.
Yeah. My other one, so this
wait, well, this sounds to me like you had a meme, a specific one you wanted to do, and then you realized it was too late. So why don't you just verbalize it?
Talk it out.
All right, it's Bernie Sanders sitting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But he's in
wait,
a cat.
What is he wearing?
He's wearing the mittens and the gloves, and he's sitting.
And the coat?
Okay, hilarious.
He's sitting like.
The coat's from the other meme, too, by the way.
Yeah, okay. This is already hilarious, Hank.
Hank, I'm once again asking you to continue your meme.
All right, and then he's sitting at the pub with the Peaky Blinders.
That's good.
Yeah.
Just imagine that had gone out at like 12:01 on Wednesday.
Right. Like I wasn't really paying attention, and by the time I tuned in and saw, you know, how hilarious it was too late, and I lost sleep over it. Can't lie.
Mm.
And then my other one. So this one, I was talking to PFT whether or not I should even say it before because I might just like double firefest myself with this, but. My HVAC unit needs to get like work done because like the heat will turn on then just turn off after 20 minutes. So we were emailing back and forth with my landlord and the person that is coming, and he was like, "Oh, I can come on Friday." By the way, I am in all caps huge fan of Chicks in the Office and part of my take.
Oh,
no. So it's just the awkwardness is my fire fest that this guy that's a huge fan is just gonna be chilling in my apartment, obviously judging the shit out of it and me, and just
Normie.
Normie.
Well,
it's just
a nice guy.
I'm sure he is a nice guy, and I'm sure I'm just overthinking it and just being like, it's just the awkwardness. It's just awkward.
He's absolutely
going
to be sneaking pictures of Normie. He's going to have his phone out. He probably thinks he's going to get a threesome.
Hank.
In his wildest dreams.
Don't you only speak Spanish at home, though? So it's going to be tough for him.
Yeah.
See.
Like that. I thought you said that. You always wanted to raise Norman as an Espanol speaker, so you only speak Spanish at home.
Yeah, I've been getting hooked on phonics, learning my Spanish.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So he seems like a nice guy, but unfortunately, if you come to Hank's house and he's there, he will not understand what you're saying.
Well, that's why it's really just awkwardness, but my hope is that I was like, PFT, do you think if I say this, he'll hear it by 11 a.m. when he's supposed to come? And he was like, probably not. So I'm just hoping that when this guy hears it, it's after he's already been in my apartment. Otherwise, it's going to be even more awkward.
Yeah.
Mm.
Mm. And if you're listening to it right now, just bring a cat over and just let it loose in Hank's apartment.
No, if you're listening to this right now, dude, you actually sound like a really sweet dude. So you're cool to like hang out for a while. Maybe some Warzone?
Yeah. I like that. Get stream with him.
Yeah. I'll hop on stream.
Go live. Go live with the HVAC guy.
Dude, why not? Are you not? Do you not like our fans?
No, that's what I'm saying. It's not. It's really. It's nothing to do with the guy. I'm sure he's a great guy. It's just, you know how it is. It's just awkward. It's just.
I
would rather the people that come into my house, I would rather pretend that they don't know I exist rather than outwardly be like, hey, I know you.
Disagree.
I'd rather
disagree. I think that's cool that he did that this way. I would so much rather someone just say it outright than imagine if they, like, as they were leaving, they're like, hey, just a heads up, I'm a huge fan. You're like, well, what?
But the damage is done. Then he's leaving.
What did I say?
Yeah.
Then it's,
yeah, but what did I say? What did I do? Like, did he take a picture? I think it's way better that you just know it. Because now you can just be like, hey, all of our cards are on the table here.
I guess. I'd rather him say it on the way out, and I could be like, all right. And then it's already over. The deed is done. There's nothing you can do to change the past.
Oh, if you're listening.
Unless you're Tenet.
Give Hank a real clear picture of how to fix the pipes in this office.
Mm. Oh, sure.
He'll probably know, right?
Yeah, maybe
I'll
bring
that
him here.
Job.
Yeah, if he has some extra time, we'll pay.
Yes.
I would gladly pay hundreds of dollars to have somebody fix this thing just so I could hold that over Pete's head for the rest of his life. Just be Pete. I took care of it myself.
Fuck Pete. Pete, you still here?
Just clean the pipes.
He's still here. Fuck
he's like,
you, Pete.
One day I'm going to come. I'm going to just keep keep trying.
Yeah, I can just hear him masturbating in the other room. All right, Jake, do you have a fire fest?
Yeah, I showed up to my orthodontist appointment this morning to get some more Invisalign for my bottom row. And they told me my appointment was canceled. And I'm like, no, you canceled it the day of that blizzard in December.
It's a blizzard.
Remember the blizzard in December?
Yeah, we had like 6 inches of snow. Yeah.
You could forget. But yeah,
Jake, you go to the doctor too?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Such a PUSSY.
Oh man. All right, you want to do it numbers?
Yeah, let's go with it. I'm going to go 8.
1800.
I think I'm going to do 8 again.
9.
Fun fact, in ancient Greece, pigeons delivered the results of the Olympic Games.
What'd you say, Big Cat?
100.
52.
I feel like it's been in the 50s for a while now.
52. 52. 5-2.
What is it?
52.
52. 52.
Yeah. Wow, a 5 Pete. 52. We had 452. Now this is our 5th. We last had it December 27th.
Jesus.
That's nuts.
52's got a dynasty.
It's too bad 52 is not on the roulette wheel for this weekend.
Yeah.
It goes up to
36. Go download the Barstool Sportsbook app. Play if you're in Michigan. Gamble responsibly.
You know what we should do this weekend? We should have somebody in this room playing the lotto machine and then telling us what number to put our bets on the roulette. Like, yes. Can you imagine if that hits?
We need a zero, a double zero.
On Sunday we can.
Yeah.
On Sunday we can. Yeah.
What about Saturday? Yeah.
Saturday I don't think people come in the office.
Okay. We'll see. All right. Love you guys.
There once was a ship that put to sea, and the name of that ship was the Billy O' T. The winds blew hard about it down. Blow me, bully boys, blow. Talking away. On the walk. Up to say, I'd say it anyway. Today's my day to find you shying away. I'll be coming for your love again. Shying away. I'll be coming for your love again. Take on me. Take me on. I'll be gone in a day or two. Needless to say, I'm odds and ends, but I'll be stumbling away. Slowly learning that life is okay. Say up to me, it's for better to be safe than sorry. Say up to me, it's for better to be safe than sorry. Take on me. Sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tugging is done, we'll take our leave and go.